Thank you all, and Madam Clerk, we'll introduce our first hearing item for this morning, item C1, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider use, hearing to consider the Justice Assistance Grant funding and amend the operational budget to include additional equipment for the regional firearm simulator trailer and approve a budget adjustment from unanticipated revenue in the amount of $12,362. All districts' recommendations for approval and the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. With that,
good morning, Honorable Board and staff. Steve Bolts, Undersheriff. This item is a request by the Sheriff Coroner for your board to approve the purchase of additional equipment and supplies to enhance the existing regional firearm simulator trailer. The trailer is a mobile training lab purchased last year through small and rural counties money. This is a 30-foot utility trailer with an automated video firearms training system installed within, allowing public safety officers to conduct firearms training in a wide variety of real-life shoot or don't shoot situations. The department proposes to spend $12,262 on these enhancements, which includes two laser flashlights designed to interact with the system and simulate nighttime shooting conditions, one Glock simulated laser weapon, 50 rechargeable recoil rounds to simulate the actual feel of the recoil of a weapon being fired, and lettering and graphics for the trailer. The department has been authorized to spend up to $12,500 by the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, through the Justice Assistant Grant, or JAG, program. The terms of the grant require a public hearing before the governing body and approval of the expenditure by the board with a 4/5 vote. The department requests that your board approve an appropriation transfer from unanticipated revenue in the amount of $12,362 and amend the operating budget in the same amount in order to use the grant funds for this purchase. And I'm going to confirm that. The correct amount is $12,362. I earlier stated in error, and amend the operating budget in the same amount in order to use the grant funds for this purchase. I will be happy to answer any questions that are presented during the public hearing or by the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bolts. Any questions? Mr. Lento.
I have a question. I have a comment. Mr. Bolts, I want to not only thank you, the sheriff, and the sheriff's department, because in the details of this report, it goes on further to explain that this training facility is available to not only your animal control officers, but other officers throughout the county, be they city, state. And this is state-of-the-art training that is extremely valuable for all of our local law enforcement to have. And I thank you for providing that for them with your leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the supervisors. Ms. Bianchi.
Oh, I would be really happy to move approval for this.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. A roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Lentol?
Aye.
Mr. Obit?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ashagi?
Aye. Next item, Madam Clerk, please.
Next item is item C2. This is a hearing to consider a resolution of necessity for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport Runway 11-29 extension project, including land for temporary construction easement. This is in the 3rd District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Good morning, Chairman Asajj, members of the board. Dwayne Live, General Services Director. There is no staff report this morning. Negotiations are still ongoing, and we would request your board to continue this hearing for one more week.
Thank you. With that, any questions or comments for Mr. Live? Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for a
move that we continue this item 1 week.
Second.
Well, it being in the 3rd district, it's moved by the 5th district and seconded by the 2nd district.
They were faster than I could move forward here.
Moving on.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Okay, ayes have it. Next item, please.
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by Nathan and April Vasquez of the denial of a curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver request, DRC 2005-00192, located at 1343 L Street in the community of San Miguel. This is in the 1st District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Thank you. With staff?
Good morning, members of the Board of Supervisors. You're being asked to consider today
a appeal of the denial of the curb gutter and sidewalk waiver.
Hang on just a sec. Adam Clark, could we have the PowerPoint put up?
They have a new system they're working on.
Ms. Kavanaugh, Elizabeth, did you give us your name?
I'm Elizabeth Kavanaugh, planning staff.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
And the voice in the background is Ms. Griffin.
The site is located in the community of San Miguel in the residential single-family land use category. It's located in the middle of the block between the 13th and 14th Street on L Street on the west side of L Street. This is some pictures of the site, and as you can tell that there is some slopes, about 15 to 20% slope on this site. The land use ordinance defines any development as an alteration of landscape, including erection of buildings or alteration of buildings. Furthermore, the San Miguel design plan requires that curb gutter and sidewalks are required for all development in the residential single-family land use category. The San Miguel design plan goes further by outlining the type of residential single-family streets they'd like to see in their community that do include curb gutter and sidewalk. And one of the San Miguel design plan goals is to enhance the streetscape of the community. The San Miguel design plan is a few years old, and the streetscape and the appearance of the community was an issue in preparing this design plan. The appeal issues on this curb gutter and sidewalk appeal are the grade of the site. It's 15 to 20% slope and will most likely require retaining the neighbor's slope to install these curb gutter and sidewalks. Timing's also an issue. The request for curb gutter and sidewalk was made after the building permit was issued, and this kind of goes back to the grade that may have changed the grading permit and the grading plans and how that site was actually laid out if the request was done at the time of building permit. Public Works and Planning Department's response to these are simply that there's a lot of, well, six curb gutter and sidewalks being created or have been created on L Street, and half of these have been on these 15 to 20% slopes. This area has drainage concerns, and Public Works feels that creating the curb gutter and sidewalk will not take away the drainage issue, but will decrease the drainage in this area. And the request for timing for curb gutter and sidewalk is, it was unfortunate that it came in at a late time. Our ordinances do not require when we request curb gutter and sidewalk. And Public Works has determined that if we do not require curb gutter and sidewalk in this area, there will be a gap in this quickly developing street where most of the street has curb gutter and sidewalk, if not all of it, except for this one piece of property. For those reasons, staff is recommending that you deny the appeal, DRC 2005-00192, and require the curb gutter and sidewalk be installed for this site. And I'm available for any questions. Richard Marshall of Public Works is here if you have any questions for him.
Ms. Kavanaugh, since this is has a specific plan for San Miguel, when a permit is issued,
a specific plan
requirement by the community to have curb sidewalk, isn't it spelled out right then?
It is spelled out in the San Miguel design plan that it is a standard for residential single-family development to have curb gutter and sidewalk.
But how would that information be communicated with the applicant?
Oftentimes it is communicated at the time of a building permit, submittal, and review.
Okay, with that, Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kavanaugh, you said earlier that most of the residents on L Street have curb gutter and sidewalk.
No, most of the residents do not. Most of the new developed residents on L Street, half curb gutter and sidewalk.
And how many would that be? I haven't been to the area, and I've just looked at the photos that you have, that staff has, and also that the appellant came through the office. Can you give me a rough estimation of how many projects are under construction or how many are in the pipeline or how many actually already have curb gutter and sidewalk?
There's currently 6 projects that have been completed or in the pipeline on L Street that have completed curb gutter and sidewalk or will complete curb gutter and sidewalk.
What is the proximity to this site with the new developments?
That I don't know, but San Miguel and L Street's a pretty limited area, I would say within a half a mile, all of them.
It's scattered. There is different topography in some of those areas she's referring to.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson followed by Supervisor Bianchi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was along those same lines. On the street where this residence is located, I am told that most of the residents along that street actually front on the alley, and the back of the homes are on L Street and therefore would have no egress or ingress to the site from L Street. And you mentioned, Ms. Kavanaugh, that there were 6 projects along L Street. Are they in the same block? Is this particular residence or spread out throughout the entire length of the street?
On the second question as to the actual location of the curb gutter sidewalk improvements, I defer to Mr. Marshall. As far as how the actual street is laid out, a lot of the homes are created, existing, are on the alley side of this street. And L Street has the street and then the alley on the backside, and these lots essentially have double frontage. A trend we're seeing now is that we're doing lot line adjustments that are creating the long, skinny lots of this area into more square-shaped lots, one receiving access from the alley and one receiving access from L Street. And we've seen quite a few of these. And at this time, that's what this applicant has done, and that's why we have a new house on L Street that has triggered this curb gutter and sidewalk requirement.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Not at this time.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, approximately how many parcels are there that are unimproved, the relationship between improved and unimproved lots on L Street? Like, is it one-third improved, one-third unimproved, you know?
It's more than half.
I don't want an exact number. It's just an approximate.
My guess would be less than one-third.
Improved?
Improved at this point, but I would hope Mr. Marshall might have a better answer.
Do we by any chance have an aerial shot of this neighborhood?
Yeah, but you can't see it very well.
Okay. Mr. Marshall, did you want to participate?
Thank you, Supervisor Shaji, members of the board, Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. There was a question earlier that was deferred to me, and I can provide you this information that was collected by my coworkers. The 6 projects which have constructed curb gutter and sidewalk improvements are located between 9th and 13th Street, and this particular project is between 13th and 14th. So it's in the same vicinity, but not the exact same block.
Mr. Marshall, if I might ask a question, is there a considerable amount of topography difference in those block areas? Do you come from almost flat?
I don't know the definition of considerable, but sure, there's some variety there, yes.
Because as you get farther towards the south, it's flat. And as you go to this area here on up towards the school, it's fairly steep all the way through.
We have reviewed this site and recommend that curb gutter and sidewalk can be reasonably installed.
Any questions to Mr. Marshall?
Thank you,
Mr. Marshall. This is an appeal, so we'll go to the applicant, Ms. Vasquez. Ms. Vasquez, we're going to give you 10 minutes to start with, then you have another 5 minutes after public's comment.
My name is April Vasquez, and I'm speaking on behalf of my husband, Nathan Vasquez, and myself. I did have the privilege of meeting with each one of you prior to today's hearing to discuss the issues pertaining to our curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver request and appeal. The subject property we are discussing is our single-family home in San Miguel at 1343 L Street. In August of 2004, our building plans and major grading plans were approved for construction of our house. Permits were paid for and obtained on September 2nd, 2005. Construction commenced immediately. On March 21st, 2006, a letter from Michael Leary from the County Public Works Department was sent to us. The letter stated that it had come to the department's attention that curb, gutter, and sidewalk were a required improvement for our building project. This notification was sent over 6 months after construction had started and 19 months after the engineered plans had been approved. This was the first time we had heard anything about the need for curb, gutter, and sidewalk. I called Michael Leary on March 24th, the day I received his notification. After explaining our situation, Mr. Leary expressed that the department had made a mistake and that we needed to comply or file a waiver request. On March 30th, 2006, I called Glenn Marshall in Public Works and had him fax me the waiver request forms. After another lengthy conversation on this issue, Mr. Marshall also confirmed the department's oversight. On April 7th, I submitted a general application form and a curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver application, along with a fee of $384, to the County Department of Planning. The basis for our waiver request was the timing of the notification and incompatible grade, along with several other major concerns that were outlined in a letter submitted with the request. I followed up on the applications after 2 weeks. I was told at the time by Public Works that Elizabeth Cavanaugh was the planner handling our project and that no action had been taken as of yet. I waited another week and called Ms. Cavanaugh. I discussed the issue with her and was told that the Public Works and Planning Department needed to address the waiver request. On May 9, 2006, I spoke with Ms. Cavanaugh again on the status of the waiver and to reiterate my concern with this requirement. She agreed to visit the site on May 11th and take a look for herself. I followed up twice on that visit and received a letter from her on May 30th, 2006, declining our waiver. We were notified about our right to appeal. I submitted an inland appeal application along with a $313 fee on June 12, 2006. During this time, I was researching the physical requirements for curb, gutter, and sidewalk of a single-family home. I spoke with Sam Taylor in Public Works about the process. He notified me that engineering would be required and that I needed to pay the fees for that service. Mr. Taylor also explained that the engineering fee schedule was changing from $37 to $61 per foot by the end of June. Because of this, I paid the engineering fees of $2,625 under protest on June 27, 2006. After confirming with Glenn Marshall in Public Works, the secretary explained that the fee would be reimbursed if the pending appeal was accepted. Our appeal is based on several factors, the first of which is the timing of the notification. The Planning or Public Works Department failed to inform us of the curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirement at any time during the permit process. Not only did the project pass through the building permit process, but also through major grading. In addition, plans were resubmitted with corrections to be reviewed again. At no time did this issue ever arise. It came to the Planning Department's attention during a building permit review of another property in San Miguel. Secondly, there are no existing curb, gutter, and sidewalks on our block. Thirdly, the grade of our lot is not compatible with these improvements. As noted in Elizabeth Cavanaugh's letter submitted for you today for today's hearing as item C3, page 3, under grade, she states that the slope is 15 to 20%. If you look at the site plan and the topography map, it is clearly a 25% grade sloping up to a 50% incline. This represents a lot slope of 2 to 1 to 4 to 1. In reference to document C3, page 13, written by Richard Marshall, the Land Use Ordinance section 22.05.106 pertaining to incompatible grade clearly states that the max grade cannot exceed 2 to 1. This is in direct conflict with Mr. Marshall's statement that the grade is compatible. In order to regrade at this stage, retaining walls would need to be installed at neighboring properties. This grading issue should have been addressed at the onset of construction. The house is now complete for 2 months. In addition, 2 water meters would need to be relocated and 1 tree removed in order to install the improvements at this time. The personal financial implications of this requirement are considerable at this stage of the project. We should have had the opportunity to consider all of the costs of construction prior to moving forward with this house. Above all else, the manner in which this curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirement was implemented was wrong. To attach costly construction requirements to a house that is complete is unfair and an unprofessional act on the part of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Department. During our individual appointments prior to today's hearing, several of you had mentioned the desire to confirm whether a mistake was made on the part of the Planning or Public Works Department. It is clearly written on page C3, number 4, in Elizabeth Cavanaugh's letter of recommendation for today's appeal that, quote, it was unfortunately overlooked during the routine processing of this building permit application, unquote. Others of you were concerned with setting a precedent for future waiver request applications in San Miguel. I'm sure that you can see that this situation is unique to this project, and I hope that you consider this as an individual circumstance. Future requirements should not be addressed at this stage, but during the permit process. I'm asking you to support our waiver request for curb, gutter, and sidewalk. In addition, I ask that the following fees be reimbursed. You do have copies of the receipts that I provided. $2,625 for engineering fees paid under protest. No engineering has commenced at this stage. $384 curb, gutter, and sidewalk waiver application fee that was denied, and a $313 inland appeal application fee, totaling $3,322. These are all fees directly associated with this hearing, and copies of the receipts are available for you. This requirement has been illegally opposed on my project, and based on the recommendation of my legal counsel, I wish to maintain my right for subsequent litigation, depending on the outcome of today's hearing. Thank you in advance for your support.
Thank you, ma'am. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing no one approaching, Ms. Vasquez, since there are no public addressing us, I'll come back to you. Do you have any closing remarks you want to make?
I would just hope that you would consider this on an individual basis, and I think the concern was whether we're going to leave gaps in our project. Mm-hmm. There are no gaps to be left. There is no sidewalk on our street. You talked about grade as an issue. It's considerably different grade on that portion of the block, and I did provide photos for you at a prior time to show the difference in the street design in that particular area of L Street as opposed to the one sidewalk that is further down on L Street at this time.
Thank you, ma'am. Unless my colleagues have questions for you, you may be seated. Supervisor Lentil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Marshall a question if I could. Mr. Marshall, in the staff report, there appears to be a time lag, whether it's a year, 18 months, or 19 months, until these people were notified. My concern is the size and scope of this property. If they'd have known they were going to do some excavating, obviously from looking at the pictures, they would have probably done that at the same time they dug out or excavated for their subterranean garage and things of that nature. And my concern is, in this issue of fairness, is this something that periodically happens? Is this just an unusual case that seemed to fall through the cracks or whatever? But how do you explain this time lag before they were told to come in compliance with the curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirement?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I'd like to confidently stand before you and promise that this is the only time this has ever happened or ever will happen. I fear that I probably shouldn't promise that, but it's earnestly our attempt that this isn't a thing going on regularly, and certainly we're in heightened awareness mode about the San Miguel design plan, and it's not going to happen again like this one happened. My explanation for how the time lag occurred is that during the initial processing of the building permit in the Public Works Department, we simply did not, the individuals who touched the permit were not aware of the new requirements of the design plan and processed it under the other requirements for a more standard what we would call a rural road driveway approach, and that was handled on a routine basis. It wasn't until another building permit came along on the same street, different staff worked on it who were more familiar with the new requirements. In doing their site work, they said, hey, what about that project that's under construction nearby? And that was this one. And that's when we contacted the applicant as soon as we made that realization. I know this is a kind of a screw-up on our part. We really struggled with what exactly to recommend to your board. We would have, in a minute, just said, we messed this up. They shouldn't have to pay the price. But we really feel that this is what the community said they want in the design plan, and that it's important for pedestrian safety and drainage. Otherwise, we wouldn't have gone through this exercise.
I understand that. Would it be another option or alternative to say that until somebody builds on either side of them, that there's another project that come down the pike where they'd have heavy equipment there that would be economy of scale, to say the effect of, we don't want you to do this right now, but we do have a long-term goal of having more curb gutter and sidewalks, so if nothing else, I guess you'd hold it in abeyance until there were two houses on either side, and maybe they could do it all at the same time. Is that ever an option or something we've considered in the past?
That's not a sequence of process that we've used on any other occasion that I'm aware of. I think if we were to implement that, we'd have to ask these folks to post a bond, because if their building permit process is finished, there wouldn't be any other way to engage a requirement for them to do this work later, except if we had some sort of bond that would be held. And I don't know if that's necessarily better than the mess we're in now.
Thank you.
Mr. Ovid, followed by Ms. Bianchi, then we'll go to council.
Yeah, I need to express something. When the design plan was done, that was almost 3 years ago, and I will agree that the community was looking at curb gutter and sidewalk, but I think if you went back and asked the community about this particular area, they're going to tell you that it's ridiculous. And I'll tell you why, because if you look at any of the photographs you have, plus the ones that were given to us by the applicant, first of all, both neighbors on either side are built down to the property line. They're not going to see another house on either side. Second of all, if you go from about 8th Street to about 16th Street, you will find that the uphill side is all of the same topography. The downhill side is flat. And the areas where they talked about new construction having putting in curb gutter and sidewalk on are on the downhill side. There's some apartments that were built, some other things that are in there that have curb gutter and sidewalk. You also have, in one of these pictures, about a block north of this, the street actually splits and goes downhill, and there's a small restaurant apartments, and then there's a narrow two-way street above it. So the topography is going to be very difficult to, say, put curb gutters and sidewalks in on that particular case. There's also a picture of a house one block to the east, brand-new construction, no curb gutter and sidewalk. So I have trouble saying consistency when they haven't been applied.
I can address those if
this. Well, I was going to say that there is one more house that I know of that is built to the north of, I think it's 14th Street, that will probably be looking for an appeal because it's under the same situation. It's just on a flat side hill, and it's very difficult to put them in. Not to belabor this, but in Templeton, we have the same situation about curb gutter and sidewalk until we get on Old Country Road, which that whole neighborhood, all the way down through it, is tree-lined and has no curb gutter and sidewalks. And we have looked at it from a standpoint that is better for it than to have one curb gutter in the middle and then none on the other sides of this thing, because it's more the ambiance. But I think if you look at these pictures, both north and south, it's going to create worse of a nightmare or an issue than it would be to get this one put in and not have them on any others.
Mr. Marshall, before I go to Ms. Bianchi.
No, I turned my light off because okay. My question was answered.
Elizabeth, could you put on the projector the exhibit from the design plan that we were looking at earlier? The residential single family standard?
No, Cliff and I went back looking and we were having a hard time finding where this was at.
This is the exhibit from the design plan that we've been referring to at the staff level. and the gray shaded areas encompassed by the two boxes are locations where the community plan says to not require curb, gutter, and sidewalk improvements for various reasons that are spelled out in the text. The property we're talking about is, could you show us, Elizabeth?
Right in there.
It's outside of the shaded area, so we assume that means the community said it applies here.
It's on the downhill side of that box, yeah. That box goes up the alley.
Right. In this block it does. The one house that's recently built that doesn't have improvements, that's one of the ones that's in process. I'm afraid it's the other one that got notified late, but they have paid the fees and posted the bond, and they are planning to build next month. The next block, there's another block where the existing traveled way divides, and it's, as Mr. Obit was saying, it's separated by some grade. We actually have an application recently for property in that block, and we're working on a design to accommodate that terrain. And finally, the point about Old County Road, I agree, that's a standard waiver area, and that's based on a number of projects that went through this process before the Board of Supervisors and in that direction. So this is the way to get to a situation like that.
The only disagreement I have with you, Mr. Marshall, is the fact is that the majority of lots along that whole side are developed. There are, and they're down to the edge. There are some that will be built, and I'm not just going to do, especially on the corner of 10th and, I think it's 10th and L, and some of those are coming in right now. But this particular one, if I recall, and going up and down the street, the uphill side is going to be very difficult to do. In fact, if you want to take the stone wall out of that one house, you know, that's probably what you'd have to do. And there's some old houses that are built down to the property.
I think some of that is what's recognized by the exhibit that's on the screen.
Now, the stone house is actually not inside that exhibit.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is
stone wall, I mean.
The information I have.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Mr. Lindholm? Oh.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Lindholm, County Council. I think I should mention at this point in time that if the board is going to go ahead and grant the appeal, then it is going to have to prepare findings with respect to granting the appeal. However, if it's going to deny the appeal, we have spotted a legal problem this morning after the presentation by the appellant involving the question of whether the land use ordinance requires that the design plan standards be applied to a ministerial permit, such as a building permit. And if the board were going to deny the appeal, our recommendation would be that we put this over for a week and allow us to confer with planning and public works concerning this issue. If the board is going to go ahead and grant the appeal, then you can refer it back to staff to make the appropriate findings and bring those back next week. In either event, we'll be able to straighten out the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments, discussions, possible motion?
I'll make a motion if you have no other comments.
Well, Mr. Patterson came online.
A question I would like to address. The concern I have is that when we get a situation like this and we have a block that is interrupted throughout with areas where you have curb, gutter, and sidewalk and areas where you don't, how does that ever get rectified? I know Atascadero, when they were starting to develop many of that, those areas, there are homes with out-paved streets in between homes that have paved sections of streets, same with curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and it creates a very unstable situation for that block. And I do feel for the appellant here that, you know, we've got a situation where they could have done it much more economically had they known up front. But how do we ever get out of this situation once we start? And I guess my question is, realistically, can we expect that street to develop the entire length with curb, gutter, and sidewalk? Are there other projects in that block that will have curb, gutter, and sidewalk on the same side of the street in the future? That hasn't been clearly answered yet.
Apparently, my understanding that there are, but it's their backyard. But, Mr. Marshall, did you want to respond to that?
Sure. The other projects that are either recently completed or in progress are not in the same block as this application. They're elsewhere along the length of L Street. Is it reasonable to expect that other projects will come along in this block of L Street? Absolutely. Whether all of the projects, all of the properties on that block will experience development very soon, probably not so likely. We find ourselves challenged by this patchwork level of improvement in numerous places throughout the county, and this is a great example of, do you say, well, because there's not going to be a completed system, we don't make the first person go first, or what do we do about it? There's one neighborhood in Oceano where we're spending grant funding from a program called Safe Routes to Schools, and we're constructing sidewalks on existing county roads there with this grant funding. I can't recall if it's a state or federal source, but that's one possible solution to this situation. Other opportunities exist for financing these improvements, either the property owners getting together in an assessment district or the board, through its generosity, allocating general fund money. I mean, the range of possibilities is great. The likelihood of any of them probably not so great. And thus we have patchwork improvements throughout the county.
Okay, Supervisor Ovitt, motion.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. I need to refer probably back on that design plan, because that area basically goes from the park north, and it's all flat, and it's all same residential. You know, this is all the older part, and there is no curb, gutter, and sidewalk within that area, or were there? And there has been some new construction in there that has not gone in, and I'm not sure why the community didn't look at the slope on this thing. And one of the problems I have is that the community, some of this community design was done back in the 80s, and when they did this Salinas plan, and that was pretty much done by staff and not by the local community, and they redid some of it. So,
and you.
My motion is at this particular time to grant the waiver and reimburse the fees as requested.
Would that be a tentative motion?
I guess we're going to have to go tentative motion to the next week. Can we just do the findings and get it? It would be a short thing. Okay. There's two reasons. One is when I talked to the applicant, we tried to figure out how to put the findings and get it done today, because they are trying to get their final and get moved in, and it is costing them money in terms of their construction loan. So if we can get it on next week's agenda, I would appreciate it.
Can we do both at the same time? It's a tentative motion and allow them to move forward.
Well, my recommendation would be that we continue the matter to next week.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
It's a tentative motion to uphold the appeal and waive the fees and bring it back next meeting.
Can you be specific about what fees you're waiving, please? Are you waiving all the fees that she's listed on these three pages?
Yeah, one is the engineering fee, which would not be used anyway. The other one was the $313 appeal fee, and then the other one was $384 waiver. For which none of us...
The appeal.
Yeah. So that would be a total of those three.
Okay.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Ms. Bianchi, Mr. Lundwell already seconded that. But for clarification, we say next week. Can we give a date? And
you are saying August 1st.
August 1st.
Right.
Okay. Under discussion, Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ovitt, would it be appropriate to... address the community design plan relative to this block so we don't continue having this issue come up along this street? I mean,
Elizabeth Cavanaugh represents the San Miguel area, and I think through her and Cliff and I, we'll get this back on the agenda with them, because this area is going to be, going to have everybody come and appeal this situation, because it is very difficult. We're also working on putting street addresses on the alleys for 911, because there are no addresses on the alley. The actual street address on these are on L or K Street, which is on both sides of it. So there are some things we have to improve on, I guess.
Okay, with that, the roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shaji?
Aye. With that, Mr. Lindholm, anything on the closed session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The board is about to go into closed session on the items which have been listed on the agenda, and we should notify the public that one of the items on the agenda is a conference with the board's labor negotiator concerning in-home supportive service providers. And there are four represented organizations listed there. When the board considers that item, the board will not be sitting as the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo. It will be sitting as the governing body of the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority for San Luis Obispo County, pursuant to Chapter 8.90 of the San Luis Obispo County Code. That's the only addition I have at this point.
Does anyone from the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll adjourn to the closed session and return at 2 p.m.
Upstairs, downstairs.
No. Up, down?
Upstairs, yeah.
Okay.
20 minutes, Mr. Lloyd?
20 minutes, right.
Thank you, and welcome to our afternoon session. Mr. Lindholm, any report from the closed session, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. The board met in closed session this morning as both the Board of Supervisors and on one item met as the governing body of the In-House Supportive Services Public Authority for San Luis Obispo County. The board did not take any final actions in either role. Therefore, no public report is required, and that's the public report for today. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, if you'll introduce the next item, please.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just sit there.
The next item on your item on your agenda is item D1. This is submittal of an update of the San Luis Obispo Drainage Feature Reevaluation Final Environmental Impact Statement Review.
Would that be Jeff or...
That would be me.
Okay. Mr. Oliveria.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Jeff Oliveira, Environmental Division staff, and I'm here to give a quick presentation on the San Luis Drainage Feature Reevaluation Project, which will include a brief overview of the project history and overview of the history of the county's responses in opposition, in particular to the ocean disposal alternative. And with that, I'll get started. Just a real brief overview of the history of this project. Back in the 1960s, Congress enacted public law that authorized construction of the San Luis unit of the Central Valley Project, or CVP. That authorization included design and implementation of drainage systems for the purpose of draining agricultural runoff water. In 1983, some of you may recall there was an incident at one of the reservoirs that was collecting that drainage water. It was well-publicized discovery of deformities of aquatic birds at the Kesterson Reservoir, which is part of that drainage system project. As a result, and subsequent to that incident, subsequent court cases and appeals resulted in a requirement to provide drainage service to the San Luis unit. And what fell out of that was a study by the Bureau of Reclamation, and it was titled the Preliminary Alternatives Report for the San Luis Drainage Feature Reevaluation. And what that reevaluation included were eight alternatives designed to provide the required drainage service for the San Luis unit. The EIS that was published was an analysis of those eight alternatives. This map up on your screen comes right out of that EIS. As you see, I put in a reference here. I apologize if you can't read it, but this is approximately where we're at here with Estero Bay. The San Luis unit that I was describing is approximately this area here along the Highway 5 corridor. Covers a pretty wide area. The project alternatives that came out of the reevaluation that were analyzed in the EIS included the no project alternative, including four in-valley project alternatives. All those alternatives would be implemented in the valley and include, most of them include common elements of land retirement, water, water treatment facilities, and reuse of salt-laden water on salt-tolerant crops. There were also two alternatives for disposal of water in the San Francisco Bay Delta, and then the ocean disposal alternative that we're here to talk about today. And as many of you know, the ocean disposal alternative is basically a project whereby drainage water would be transferred to Estero Bay via a pipeline that would essentially dump the untreated, tainted agricultural water in a ocean diffuser approximately 1.5 miles offshore from northern Estero Bay and about 200 feet deep in the ocean. This is another graphic from the EIS that shows, again, the San Luis unit and the approximate alignment of that proposed pipeline. As you see, this right here is Kettleman City, and the pipeline is proposed to continue west. Looks like along the 46 corridor. This is Paso Robles here out towards Estero Bay. The county has a history of opposition to this ocean disposal alternative. The following slides are a brief history of that opposition, beginning with County Planning Department staff attending a community public hearing in Cayucas put on by U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. The public hearing was well attended. It was a lot of concerned stakeholders as well as other agencies and jurisdictions there to voice their opposition officially to the Bureau of Reclamation for the ocean disposal alternative. Subsequent to that, the Water Resources Advisory Committee met to discuss county response to the ocean disposal alternative. Again, that was another effort by the county to include other agencies, jurisdictions, and concerned stakeholders in the comment to the Bureau of Reclamation. What fell out of that was a letter from the Board of Supervisors stating official opposition to the ocean disposal alternative to the Bureau. And the County Planning Department generated a comment letter on the draft EIS that was published, and it's addressing basically a really extensive inadequacies and inaccuracies in the draft EIS. And that was responded to, and when the Bureau of Reclamation released their final EIS in May of this year, the final EIS identified an in-valley alternative, specifically the in-valley drainage impaired area land retirement alternative as the preferred alternative. Subsequent to the publishing of the final EIS, the Board of Supervisors released a final EIS comment letter restating their opposition to this alternative, and the County Planning Department generated a final EIS comment letter earlier this month to be filed prior to the release of the Record of Decision. This next slide highlights some of the next steps that are coming up in this process. Specifically, the Bureau of Reclamation has indicated that they'll be publishing the Record of Decision by the end of this month. And the Record of Decision is the document that the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation will use to identify a final project alternative, preferred alternative. And the County Planning Department will continue to follow this project as it moves through the process and report back to the board as well as to the RAC and concerned stakeholders on the progress of this project and the overall progress of the ocean disposal alternative and whether or not that's going to be an issue. And that concludes my brief presentation, and I'll be here if there's any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from supervisors? If not, go to the public. Only have one request to speak, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I thank you very much for having this on the agenda. Obviously, the ocean disposal alternative is something we all need to agree to fight with everything at our disposal, should it be chosen. I'd like to think that it won't be chosen. The EIS seemed to identify, the final EIS seemed to identify an in-volley alternative, but we won't know until next Monday. If they should happen to choose using the ocean as a toxic dump, which is exactly what we're talking about, something that in our supposedly more enlightened 21st century, no, it would simply not occur to anyone. But if they should make that choice, we need to be able to get everything we can on the record in the subsequent 30 days. And essentially, they have an EIS that should be indefensible. I mean, should be held and proven indefensible. They have not adequately characterized the project if they choose that alternative. They have not characterized the marine food chain into which these substances would be dumped, the concentration of the substances, the amount of substances. They have not actually imposed any limitation on what could get sucked into this pipe. They have not identified a route. In the responses to the comments, to one of my comments on the EIR asking about Section 18, or Senate Bill 18 consultation with Native American groups, they forthrightly stated they had not contacted any Native groups yet. And I don't see how any record of any kind of a decision on a project of this magnitude with a major excavation across three or four counties, most of it in ours, across many creeks, many sensitive areas, through many culturally sensitive areas, how a record of decision based on an EIS with a response that says we have not contacted any Native groups, how that can stand. But of course, we have to be prepared to essentially push all the points that need to be on the record if it is not to stand. And so what I would request at this point, we're going to know finally and definitively next Monday. I think you freed up some time on your agenda next Tuesday. Could we agendize a status report just to either get the all clear, we're not in trouble anymore, or we are in trouble, here are the steps that are going to be taken. And I trust our county council's office to be ready to lead the charge. There are lots of private organizations in the county that would band together to fight this, but I think we all need to stand together, and the weight of the county would make all the efforts stronger. So I hope that we don't have to go there, but thank you. Let's be
thank prepared. You, Mr. Rink. Anyone else? Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bruce Gibson of Cayucas. I've been following this project since it reared its ugly head some years ago on behalf of our community and the advisory council there. The advisory council did at its last meeting pass unanimously a motion again in opposition to it. I'd just like very briefly to thank staff and your board for the letter of the 13th. I think it goes into all the right points in terms of assailing the inadequacies of that final EIS, to which I would add one more. I think it's already on the record, but just in case it's not, we can state it here, and that's the energy usage of the ocean outfall alternative. I think it's noted somewhere in their project description that that might be 10 times the amount of energy on an annual basis for operating that pipeline than any of the other alternatives, but none of the environmental impacts of that extra energy use have been detailed. So with that, thanks again for standing firm in opposition to it.
Thank you. Anyone else? At this time, I will close to the public. And Mr. Oliveira, any response to comments by Mr. Greening?
Sure. Mr. Greening is correct in his statements about the draft EIS, and that was reflected in the Planning Department's comment letter that was sent on the draft EIS.
How to stay on the top of this?
Pardon?
How to stay on the top of it and bringing back a report.
Yeah, the planning department's intention to follow the record decision as soon as that's published to get out a status update memo to the board, to the RAC, and all the other concerned stakeholders.
What I was going to suggest that even if it happens prior to a meeting time and date, and if we're not able to properly to inform the public, that at a public comment period, we'd like to hear as what's going on during if any decisions were made, just to bring it to our attention, which is to the attention of the public at large.
Sure, that's been our intention all along, and we'll continue.
Supervisor Bianchi, followed by Supervisor Patterson.
Well, I was going to make a motion to receive and file, so I'll make it after Mr. Patterson.
Well, I, too, just wanted to follow up by thanking staff for getting this letter off and detailing our opposition to the project and highlighting the deficiencies of the EIS, and do please keep us abreast of the latest developments.
Okay, motion by Supervisor Bianchi.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Lentil. Any further discussion?
Well, not a discussion, but just a comment that actually this had been going on for a couple of years before Jeff got here. And so I would like to thank, you know, all the rest of the planning staff that are not in the room at the moment, because I think we kind of all, I wouldn't say freaked out, but we certainly did gulp extensively the first time that Bureau of Reclamation, I get BLM and Bureau of Reclamation mixed up, came down here and casually suggested that they were going to dump that stuff in our ocean. It's like, we should be thrilled. So it's my pleasure to make this motion.
With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Thank you. Next item, please.
Item is item D2. This is a request for an authorization to process a land use ordinance amendment application LRP 2005-00012 by Javed Zani, or Sani, excuse me, to amend the land use ordinance Title 22 of the County Code, Section 22.104.090.G.2, to incorporate the subject property into the planning area standard that allows multifamily dwellings in the Office of Professional Land Use category. The purpose of this request is to allow development of 10 detached residential units totaling approximately 21,500 square feet on a 0.93-acre parcel within the 3.3-acre site located at 1315 Los Chablis Road, Community Templeton. This is in the 1st District.
Okay, would that be Mr. Hogar?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. Josh LeBombard will give the staff report on this item.
Thank you. Mr. LeBombard.
Thanks, Warren. Good afternoon, board members. Josh LeBombard, planning staff. I'm just waiting for that to come up on the screen here. Thank you. This is a request to amend Title 22, Section 22104090G2. To incorporate the subject property into the planning area standard that allows multifamily dwellings in the office and professional land use category. The subject property is located at 1315 Las Tablas Road, which is just west, southwest of Twin Cities Community Hospital. And the property is located in the office and professional land use category, as you can see here on this map. This is a photo of the site looking south. As you can see, there is a road developed. It actually curves off to the west there. And this is more of a zoom in on the portion that's proposed for development, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And this is the one business that's currently developed on the site right now, which is in the northeast portion of the site. And this is an aerial photo taken before the development of the road. The road actually comes down here. You can see with my cursor and comes out over here now, something along those lines. This is what the site looks like. There was a subdivision that was approved April 28, 2005 by the Planning Commission that subdivided this lot into 5 lots. And the subject proposal right now is on lot 3. As you can see on the right of the screen here. A separate hearing was also proposed to consider a tract map and conditional use permit to allow development of 10 detached residential units totaling approximately 21,500 square feet on Lot 3. That was scheduled for the February 23, 2006 Planning Commission hearing, but it was continued for reasons I'll get into. The site was proposed to be developed with 10 approximately 2,100 square foot single-family residences, and those were to be located on lots varying from 3,000 to 5,000 square feet. The property currently and when it was taken to the Planning Commission was subject to Section 2230490, which covers our residential uses in office or commercial retail land use category. This standard specifically says that new single-family or multifamily dwellings are allowed in the office and professional land use category, provided that they are, one, subordinate to the primary commercial office use on the site, two, located either on the second floor or rear of the site, and three, they have to be structurally attached to the main building. I just wanted to take a sidestep and define what site is composed of in our land use ordinance. A site is actually any lot or parcel of contiguous combination thereof under the same ownership. So regarding this site, we're looking at all five of those parcels because Dr. Sani still owns all five of those parcels. That's what we're considering a site. And that's a pertinent point because when we look at the subordinate nature of residential use, we typically look at and evaluate that the residential use doesn't exceed 50% of the actual physical site, and it doesn't exceed 50% of the total square footage of the site. So we're looking at the entire five-parcel site right now. So with the initial proposal of those 10 single-family dwellings, the applicant was required to propose commercial development on the remaining three vacant lots. So they had the one lot where they're proposing the 10 residential units, the one lot with the current development of the commercial use, and then they had three remaining lots. So planning staff was requiring that to meet the subordinate nature, specifically the 50% of the square footage requirement, that they propose commercial use on the remaining three parcels. We're also requiring that they phase the development so that they never exceeded the 50% criteria, and so they would have to build a certain percentage of residential, followed by commercial, followed by residential, followed by commercial, to always have that balance there. And we are also requiring that they submit full architectural elevations of the proposed commercial buildings on those three remaining lots. The applicant was also requesting adjustment of the standard, which required the units to be located either on the second floor or rear of the site and structurally attached. They were proposing that the residential units fall specifically on Lot 3, so they were detached from the commercial portion of the site, which would have been located on those four other lots. The applicant is proposing to amend the Land Use Ordinance Section 2210409G2, essentially so that they don't have to submit right now, at this point in time, the architectural elevations for those commercial buildings, because the development of the commercial buildings on those three lots is speculative at this time, and they don't want to have to submit the architectural elevations. Also, phasing of the development would be cost prohibitive. What they would have to do, like I said, was build a certain percentage of residential, then commercial, then residential, and they're proposing to just build a residential. So they're proposing to amend this section. The section specifically says that multifamily dwellings are encouraged in the office and professional land use category as part of mixed-use projects and may be allowed as an incidental use, and the key here is, or as a primary use on no more than 50% of its site through conditional use permit approval. The section 2210409G2 currently applies to the lots here that are in gray, the ones that are darkened out, and as you can see, the subject parcel is adjacent to one of the parcels that falls under that section. The options for authorization are as follows. The first one is you can authorize the processing of the land use ordinance amendment to incorporate the subject property into the planning area standard that allows multifamily dwellings in the office and professional land use category on Las Tablas Road west of Highway 101 as part of mixed-use projects, or as an incidental use, or as a principal use on no more than 50% of the site, along with a modification to the standard that allows the proposed residential use on this property to be structurally detached from the commercial or office use. If this authorization is approved, this would allow development of detached residential units on a 0.93-acre parcel within the 3.3-acre site. The second option is if you authorize processing of the ordinance amendment, but without the modification to the standard that allows the proposed residential use on this property to be structurally detached from the commercial or office use. If approved, this would allow development that would be required to be structurally attached to the primary office or commercial use. That would change up their current proposal because it would require that they build a certain portion of commercial on that site that they're proposing right now. And the third option is that you do not authorize the processing of this application based on the potential to significantly reduce the community inventory of office or commercial property available to satisfy the commercial needs of the population envisioned by the land use element, and the potential to impede the continuing orderly development of community shopping and office areas with office and other commercial uses.
So thank you.
That concludes my presentation. I'm here for any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lobbombard, option three, what is the current inventory of office commercial space in that area? Do you know? And would this significantly affect that inventory?
Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff. There's a significant amount of office and professional that's both undeveloped and being developed currently in the Templeton area. This probably would not significantly impact the amount of office and professional. If you go back to the land use map that shows all of the gold color, I don't know if it's gold on your screen, is all of the office and professional in this general area, and there's a significant amount of it, and there's a significant amount that's still vacant.
Thank you. Supervisor Wienke?
Yeah, I have a rather odd question. I mean, I think it's odd. You keep referring to detached. Detached from what?
Thank you. Point of clarification, when we're looking at residential development in the office and professional land use category, we're looking at it from a multifamily standpoint because we're referred within our land use ordinance to the multifamily standards. Multifamily dwellings are attached units, so you have a unit attached to another unit. So just as a point of clarification during this process, I wanted to make a distinction between attached units, which what we would typically call multifamily units, and detached units, which would be single-family dwellings that aren't attached to one another.
So they're not attached to one another, and they're requesting not to be attached to so it's both instead of either or.
It's both.
Both and.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? Seeing none, go to the public at this time. Don't have any requests to speak. If you wish to do so, please come forward and give us your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Tim Little with Pultz and Associates Architects, 3450 Broad Street, St. Louis. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. Josh, if you could do me a favor and put the graphic back up that shows the standard 2204090 as well as the neighborhood site plan. Point of clarification, for the most part, what we are asking is to be consistent with the standards that apply to other parcels on the Las Tablas Road corridor. That's fine. Perfect. Thank you. If you look at that, you see all the sites that are shaded. Those are all zoned office and professional, and that standard that does allow residential as an incidental or a principal use applies to all those sites. At the time that the standard was being developed, my client received a letter from the county, and quite frankly, he didn't fully understand it. He hired Paul Crawford, who wrote a letter on his behalf to the planning department requesting that he not be included in this standard. So that's in large part why we are here today. With respect to attached versus detached, certainly this is subjective. It is our opinion that mixed-use projects that are of an attached nature make perfect sense in an urban core. In a downtown setting, we think they're great. This is an office and professional, and specifically medical office and professional area, and we question the logic of attaching residential to a medical office complex. Finally, I'd like to say that we have just completed a 52,000-square-foot medical office building. We're feeling very, very fortunate that it is fully committed and will be occupied within the next 30 to 60 days. A number of the tenants came from other locations on the Los Tablas corridor. There is substantial inventory. This site is about 0.9 acres. Using reasonable development standards, we could probably get about 15,000 square feet of professional office, so that would be the loss. It's 15,000 square feet. We feel that there's strong demand for housing. This actually is a detached project, and we'd be happy to speak to the reasons why. It is, though, however, a condominium project, and so I do want to be clear there that it is single family in that the units are detached, but it is multifamily in that it is a condominium project. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. That was the last request to speak. Anyone else? Seeing none, would you please come forward and help us to get going a little on a timely matter? Would it be appreciated?
Quickly. My name is Bill White. Just follow on to Supervisor Patterson's question about how much inventory of office professional is there. I just thought that planning staff's response was rather vague in terms of statistics, and I also thought that it was rather vague in terms of referring to any objective of the town. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'll close to the public and bring it back to the board members if you have any further questions and or comments. If not, go to Supervisor Ovid for a possible motion.
I don't think there's any doubt that there's plenty of inventory. In fact, almost adjacent across the street, there's been, three new buildings put up, and they are actually being infilled from some projects that are on Los Tablas and in others that are coming from outside of Paso Robles where earthquake retrofit programs are actually making a move. So, and there's other lands that are available that have not been totally utilized yet. I think this is almost somewhat, although it's not the same, and I don't want to say it that way, mirrored of a project we just did about 9 months ago about two lots to the east of this. And I think it fits well within the guidelines of the principles we're talking about, mixed use and integrating in housing along with this office professional. And then I would move that we move forward with the authorization for the process with the option one.
Is there a motion by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Lentol? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Next item, please.
Next item is item D3, a request to approve and authorize Blue Ribbon Committee membership, committee work scope, and timeline for the Transfer of Development Credit TDC program. This is in the 1st, 3rd, 4th, and 5th districts. That's it.
Thank you. Would that be Ms. Knoll?
Good afternoon. Karen Knoll with the Planning Division. Today before you we have... on November 22nd, your board authorized the formation of a Blue Ribbon Committee to evaluate specific changes to the TDC program. Then on February 28th, your board authorized the Blue Ribbon Committee with specific areas of representation. Staff has evaluated the applications that we had received, and for you on page D35, Attachment A is staff's recommended committee makeup. I have one correction on number 7 for the Land Conservancy. Richard Bruce is actually Bruce Richard, and I apologize to Mr. Richard. And that is all the corrections I have. Staff is recommending that you approve the committee membership and the scope of work. The scope of work that is in the staff report was taken from that November 22nd meeting where you directed staff to look at certain things and also the timeline. And with that, I have I'm available for any questions.
Any questions or comments from board members? Seeing none, go to the public. First request to speak is Mr. Greening, followed by John Renault.
I'm Eric Greening, and wish to talk mostly about the scope of work, but first in relation to the membership. I think we are not going to have a seriously viable functioning program in this county without robust participation by the incorporated cities. One or two rotating type seats are not necessarily going to get the buy-in. I believe we need to create two seats for representatives of cities and have the cities collectively decide who will fill them through an action of the City Selection Committee. They are the people who decide who will represent cities on LAFCO and other collective bodies. And I just think that all the cities need to be participating in the choice, even if they're not participating in the committee, and that they can all be reported back to by the committee, by the people they select. On the scope of work, I go back remembering 15 or 16 years ago when the concept was introduced to our county at this beautiful conference, Designing Our Future, and we looked at a variety of models that were then working in many parts of this country, many of them very different from anything we have here. It would be interesting to follow up and see how those models and newer models are working, and I think part of the scope of the community should be a review of other programs and their track records and get as wide a diversity as possible so we have a genuine information base, not just talking to ourselves in sort of the habitual boxes we've put our thinking into. I also believe that one of the boxes we need to think outside of is why must receiving sites violate the general plan? Essentially, you buy the right to do something other than what the general plan says, which calls in question the whole integrity of the general plan, which is the public's essentially participatory way of ensuring that our will is done and adhered to as standards. There are a lot of standard subdivisions that comply with the general plan going on in this county all the time. They are essentially government giveaways. You give a right to subdivide. That's a giving. It's not a taking to not give such a right. And perhaps there should be areas where one requires TDCs for standard general plan compliant subdivisions. We need to look at that. In fact, we need to look at an even more basic fundamental question. Why must receiving sites lead to more development? We have essentially created about five or six times more lots than we've retired. Why must receiving sites lead to any development? In Cambria, you don't get an increase in development. You get setback waivers. It could be possible to have a system where you buy receiving credits and get faster processing without any additional development. We need to look at all alternatives outside the box,
thank
not
you,
just
Green.
Where we've looked before. Thank
Mr. Renault, followed by Sue Loft.
That's what I'm going to do.
Good afternoon, Board of Supervisors. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm John Rinaldi, live in South Atascadero, and I'm concerned about the suggested appointees on the Blue Ribbon Committee. I would strongly suggest that two of the developers be replaced by what I feel is really important, a fire marshal from the North County and a fire marshal from the South County, because fire is a real important problem. Realtors should be replaced with possibly a LAFCO member who has a better knowledge of what's going on. And on the 15th one, I think we should have someone representing a water district that happens to be on the consideration in that area. Fire, because of the high to very high fire district South Atascadero is in. The Highway 41 fire proved that we had to evacuate all the way back to San Antonio in the 41 fire. Now, the response time from either fire agency, Atascadero or CDF, could not possibly respond to the 15-minute remote test or land use ordinance requirement. Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, and Paso Robles have been rigid fire sprinkler requirements which reflect on the response time. Water A large number of those properties are on wells, and fire sprinklers, if required in the future, would put a heavy demand on the existing water along with any wells required. Roads. I've gone through the whole area. Most of the roads are substandard, badly in need of repair and maintenance. And drainage, we have severe drainage problems, previous existing in many areas, which would be very expensive to solve. Soils. In our area, it's not conducive to percolation. I have on my property, and I sit at a high area overlooking Santa Margarita Ranch, and I've had to extend my leach fields twice in 10 years. The bottom line is that this south Atascadero area is not suitable for TDE program to continue. In my professional opinion, the infrastructure doesn't exist. And in closing, I would like to quote from which Ms. DiCaccio and Ovid were involved, which shows the intent of what we're doing. It said, quote, hold the line in outlying and urban areas, protect the existing agricultural and rural character of the areas by retaining existing uses and lot sizes. This is a quote. I have it here. And so we're going from 5+ acres to 2.5 acres to now 1 acres. I think that's really quite a change. And I don't think the area really deserves to have this kind of a consideration. Does anybody have any questions from me? For my sources of information or anything? Because I spent a lot of time researching this. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Sue Luft, followed by Morgan Rafferty.
Hi, my name is Sue Luft. I'm speaking today on behalf of Passawatch. Passawatch faxed in comments that I hope that you all have had a chance to look at, and I'd just like to emphasize a few of the main points. Passawatch members have spent thousands of volunteer hours over the last 2+ years studying the intent and the effects of the TDC program, and we ask you to implement the following improvements to the committee. We ask that you use the issues identified in the Planning Commission study sessions and contained in the Planning Commission letter of May 2, 2005 as a guideline for the scope of work. Countless hours of public testimony and deliberations by the Planning Commission are reflected by their letter. We ask that you direct that all committee meetings be open to the public. We ask that you make funds available to provide expert testimony to the committee as needed. We ask that you consider that the credibility of the committee could be harmed by the perception and reality of a conflict of interest inherent in a membership which disproportionately represents individuals and companies profiting from the program. Please carefully review the committee membership to avoid this conflict. We ask that you request that the city planning directors select 2 committee members for permanent inclusion on the committee. Permanent, consistent representation for the cities is absolutely necessary for the success of this program. Please eliminate the option for rotating membership. And finally, we ask that you suspend the TDC program until the committee has completed its work. Thank you for your consideration of these issues.
Thank you. Morgan Rafferty, followed by Maria Larca.
Good afternoon. My name is Morgan Rafferty. I'm the executive director of EcoSlow, and I'm here to express our concerns about the makeup of this committee. We think there could be either the perception or reality of a conflict of interest because of the number of people on the committee who are benefiting from this program. And we also ask that all the committee meetings be open to the public. And I'd also like to address the scope of the work. I'd like to ask that you be sure that it's guided by the May 12th letter from the Planning Commission. And we want to support their argument that the TDC program is not fulfilling the land use goals to retire lots. And we support the recommendations, which include the discontinuance of the countywide TDC program and the consideration of an urgency ordinance to stop all the new applications while the ordinance is being modified. Also, the sending site criteria in the conservation element language needs to be strengthened. Finally, please ensure that the committee has the funds available to hire the experts to consult with them that they need on this very complex issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Larca, followed by Andrew Christie.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Larca from Creston. I just want to ask for clarification when you discuss four of the issues that other people have brought forward. One is the scope of work. Your decision on November 22nd was to form a committee to make recommendations and evaluate the pros and cons of the program and its ability to meet its goals. A foundation for that work has been established by your planning commissioners after hours of deliberation and public testimony, lots of hours. Please clarify that you intend that this committee evaluates the TDC program, it will work from that foundation as expressed in the Planning Commission's May 12, 2005 letter to you, and I've attached a copy of it to my statement. Number two, public meetings. Please clarify that all the meetings of this committee will be public and that public comment will be welcomed. Number three, the access to expert information. TDC issues are very complex, as you know. For example, there are only a few people in this state who are experts in appraisals of conservation easements. Clearly, this committee would benefit from the ability to consult with objective outside experts in other areas. Number four is conflict of interest. Please let us know your thinking regarding conflict of interest on this committee. Is it appropriate for an ordinance to be written or evaluated by those who would benefit financially from its use? If the public is to have confidence in the integrity of this committee's work, if the public is to have any confidence at all in the integrity of this committee's work, it's important that the issue of conflict and even the perception of conflict be openly addressed. And one final comment, TDC programs in other areas do work. I have hope that this committee can do some clear and creative work that will result in our own programs providing some real protections for our rural areas and some solutions to the problems of antiquated subdivisions. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Christie, followed by Dorothy Jennings.
Good afternoon, supervisors. I'm Andrew Christie. I'm chapter coordinator for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo County, speaking on behalf of our 2,500 members in the Santa Lucia chapter. We are gravely concerned about the appearance of conflict of interest on this committee, specifically as relates to the appointment of development interests into what should be the public sector portion of the committee. We also strongly recommend that this is not the time to limit the scope of a TDC committee to simply the four subject areas that it has been proposed to be limited to, and we suggest that you expand that to all nine of the subject areas that your Planning Commission recommended to you last May. Very quickly, we certainly concur that the lack of representation of the incorporated cities on this committee is a glaring oversight. The fact that the cities have not been involved in the TDC program is far and away the biggest reason why this program has not worked and why we have all come to this current pass. You should at least appoint two members representing the incorporated cities to the Blue Ribbon Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jennings, followed by Dolores Simons.
Good afternoon. I'm Dorothy Jennings from Templeton. I would like to summarize a letter that I sent to you earlier. The purpose of the Voluntary Transfer of Development Credit Program is to, quote, relocate development from environmentally sensitive land, land with agricultural capability, or antiquated subdivisions to more suitable places, unquote. In other words, the TDC program is intended to preserve resources and is not a development program. This forms the basis of my four-point recommendation. One, scope of work. The entire TDC program should be open to investigation. Two, membership categories. The Blue Ribbon Committee should not proceed without one or more members representing the incorporated cities. The lack of participation of the cities has been cited as a primary reason the existing TDC program does not work. No individual or company spokesman who has direct or indirect economic gain or who may seek economic benefit from the program should serve on the Blue Ribbon Committee. What really is needed is another viewpoint. Therefore, I recommend that the development category be replaced by a category called public policy, whose membership would be made up of two individuals with background in economics, public policy, and or legislation. Three, staff recommended membership. Replace proposed committee members who have a financial interest with people from the public sector. Four, revise membership to overcome District 1. And five, imbalance. District 1 has absorbed the greatest number of planned and unplanned TDCs and has the largest sending site credits produced. With this experience, committee membership in the public category should be increased commensurate with the program's impact to date. This applies to District 5 as well. In summary, scope of work should include the entire TDC program. Fill the city vacancies and replace development category with a category called public policy. Replace applicants who have a financial interest and revise membership to include more District 1 and District 5 representation. Thank you for your consideration.
Ms. Simons, followed by Catherine Sweet.
I'm Dolores Simons of South Atascadero. I've been wondering what is driving the TDC program in San Luis Obispo County. I am not a sophisticated person, nor am I a college grad, but even I have come to the conclusion this program is flawed, and it is not preserving farmland and retiring lots on ag land. The program has been evaluated and reevaluated by two grand juries, planning commission, several community advisory councils, numerous citizen groups, and countless citizens. I have been reading up on the TDC program, talking to a cross-section of people, attending and viewing hearings, and have come to the conclusion the TDC program is flawed and can be manipulated in several different ways, intentionally or not. In our case, I think that the sender site credits were overvalued and that a flawed assignment of basin bonus credits added to a volatile real estate environment and greedy speculators, along with the reluctance of the Board of Supervisors in planning to add in the TDC program, our general plan process is being undermined when receiver site projects are evaluated one by one, allowing higher density than planning area standards. Our area of South Atascadero still is in harm's way because of the counties decided on their own we would make an ideal receiving site, but never informed us. Pull the plug. Don't waste any more time on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Sweet, followed by Bill White.
I'm Catherine Sweet, and I'm going to be reading information from Sheila Lyons, who lives in Creston, and she's not able to be here today. I applied for a seat on the Blue Ribbon Committee but was not chosen. I had great optimism that this committee would be able to take a serious look at land use planning in this county. I was disappointed to find that the TDC program is now labeled by building and planning staff as a development program rather than a planning tool. Supervisor Ovitt has repeatedly referred to the TDC program as a tool in the toolbox. Where did that perspective go? I believe that if structured and used according to the original intent, the TDC program could be a unifying tool between the property owners of our county, whether they be suburban homeowners, cattle ranchers, organic farmers, vineyards, or storefront businesses, and the developers. The goal for us all is to build communities in our county that are desirable places to live and do business. Well-thought-out communities with proper infrastructure, water and sewer systems, good traffic circulation, parks, scenic downtowns, pleasant shopping environments, and in our case, thriving agricultural endeavors, benefit all by providing excellent quality of life and increased property values. I was saddened to see the limited scope set forth for this committee. I feel the process has been hijacked somewhere along the way. The Planning Commission held great study sessions, and the Board of Supervisors heard testimony and held frank discussions on the TDC issues. The current directives issued by the Building and Planning Department for this committee do not reflect all of what I heard in those meetings. These limited items for discussion show a clear lack of vision and creativity, suggesting a limited Band-Aid approach for a major arterial bleed. We need some new creative thinking on this topic. We need a plan that does not make a mockery of the existing area plans. We need a plan that does not stamp our general plan as null and void. We need a plan with an inspired vision for the future of our county. We need a plan that can work within the existing framework of our land use policies. I ask you to broaden the scope and allow the Blue Ribbon Committee to address all the issues set forth by the Planning Commission in their letter 312-2005. Give this committee the leeway it needs to examine other TDC programs, also called TDR, Transfer Development Rights, enacted in other parts of the U.S. This study has been delayed too long already. Let's have a truly objective look at TDC, TDR programs and see if they have merit. Do not tie the hands of the committee from the start. Please give the process a real chance to succeed. And for my own part, the TDC Blue Ribbon Committee has a three-year time span. That's too long to let TDCs with cumulative, negative, irreversible impacts go forward. They need to be stopped until we actually have a viable plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. White, followed by Kurt Copper.
Phil White from Templeton. Regarding the scope, I'm concerned that it may be unnecessarily restrictive. While these points suggested by staff are important ones, other issues may arise during the course of their meetings that would necessitate expansion of the scope. As an example, perhaps the analysis of how community-based programs may be easily and effectively incorporated into the TDC program needs specific focus and work. So I recommend that staff specifically adds another bullet point to their scope recommendation stating, quote, any other areas which the Blue Ribbon Committee deems important coming out of their ongoing review of the program, unquote. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Copper?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, judge, is that right?
Mm-hmm. To be.
To be. Practically a judge. It's a pleasure to be back here again. I thought you guys would have solved this a long time ago. I was had the privilege of being on the first TDC committee.
Yeah, you shouldn't have left office.
Should have stayed in office.
You know, I want to admit it now.
And we got going on it originally because there was a clear and present danger, mainly in District 1, which way back when got very aggressive in dividing land and had all these antiquated subdivisions, and it was pretty obvious to everybody that we needed some tricks to be able to back out of those commitments. And haven't gotten very far, very frankly. It seems as though the design of it was to get sending sites, but we never solved, you never solved, the receiving end of it. It just sort of transferred the problem. And you're hearing about this in South Atascadero and every place else where you're trying to stuff these pieces into places where there's already a general understanding as to what the character of the community is going to be. And it's going to be very hard, I think, to solve this as long as we continue the practice of giving away development credits, which is exactly what happens every time you rezone or cause a lot split. Somehow, nobody ever says it, but development credits are just go with that free. It's public equity, and it's given away. So somehow, if you can reach into that and address that, then the transfer of credits could actually be fairly simple, and a system could be set up such that you could do that. But nobody's going to buy the cow if they get the milk free. Good luck on it.
Thank you. Ms. Giardini, followed by Mr. Whitney.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Pamela Giardini speaking as just a person in the county. As you all know, I am in support in general of the TDC program. I think it is a great tool for managing growth. There are problems wrought with the existing ordinance, and those have come before you before. The only reason I'm here today is to caution you. In the staff report I read that we were trying to encourage it within urban and village reserve lines, which is great. That's really where it should go. But to be careful when the committee looks at those, because often within the urban and village reserve lines, such as where I live in Templeton, they don't have enough water to allow to accept those TDCs to go in there. So although it's the ideal place to locate it, you may not be able to use all your TDCs only within an urban and village reserve line. And so I had suggested before eliminating ag-to-ag transfer and rural land transfers of TDCs, but maybe keeping the residential rural and looking at each one of the residential rural or residential suburban zoned lands as individual cases as they come before your board, because limiting it only to within urban reserve line and villages reserve lines may be sort of a backdoor denial of the TDC process. So I'm just asking that you make sure you look at that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Whitney?
Mr. Chairman, board members, Charlie Whitney from Santa Margarita. The committee, to me, looks pretty satisfactory. I think it includes a pretty broad base of people. I think including the people who are going to be involved possibly in future TDCs, either as receiver sites or as sending sites, is important, simply because they are not going to, first of all, they're not going to be the ones who are going to make the decision. You will be making the decisions on this. They will be making an advisory type of an input on it to your board. I think that what we've seen here today is that most of the people who are dissatisfied with the composition of the committee are the people who did not want TDCs. If you remember back in, I believe it was November and February, there were a lot of people who just said do away with the program entirely, and your board chose to go ahead and see if it could be fixed, basically. And I think that if you have a committee that was just comprised of people from neighborhood associations and advocacy groups, that we may not be able to get a workable incentive-based TDC program in the county. And I think that's going to be one of the important parts of it, is that it's going to be incentive-based, it's going to be voluntary, you're going to have to entice people into it. Secondly, I do agree that the scope of the committee should be broadened somewhat. At least there should be some latitude allowed for additional suggestions, if you will. And thirdly, I would like to see more participation from the cities on this. I think this is going to be one of the keys to making this in a really workable program, is to have the cities involved in it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak. Is anybody else coming forward? With that, bring it back to the board. Would staff have any comments or answers to some questions or requests?
Just a couple of comments. We did fail to mention, Cammie Griffin, County Planning Staff, that Ron Wisnant, the planning director for the city of Paso Robles, has agreed to attend a majority of the meetings. And since they're actively working on what they're calling their purple belt, their participation was key. He was in the process of becoming the planning director at the time we were actively soliciting membership. So he just contacted us and did express an interest in attending. In addition, we have had Rob Strong, who is the City of Arroyo Grande Planning Director, express an interest. And I have been talking with John Mandeville, the Planning Director with the City of San Luis Obispo, about participating. So I think we'll have a good representation from the city planning directors. I also did want to note that with Ron's participation, 8 of the 15 members are from the North County. We were really looking for a geographical balance amongst the committee. And with that, we would look to your board for direction.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi?
Yes, there are only 4 members who would, I believe, directly profit, 4 out of 15. And I don't find that a preponderance of people who will profit from the use of this. You want me to name them?
No.
Be careful, you might be liable.
you know, there are two members from development and there are two members from the environment. They should balance each other out. And there's one member from Farm Credit West who certainly ought to have some knowledge of the economy that's going, the economic problems. I think that's a really important person to have. And there's one realtor. There's also a rancher. So I really, and as Mr. Whitney said, this is an advisory group only. We will be the ones that will be making the final decision. If we perceive that someone has advised something that stemmed from a profit motive, we can discount that. I mean, we're not, you know, I don't want to be sarcastic, but I will. You know, we're not that stupid.
Oh, come on.
And I would like to include the five provisions from the Planning Commission. I think they overlap some of the provisions that you all have, that staff has made here. They sort of mesh together. They're using different language. But just in case, you know, I would like to say that we incorporate those provisions as well, because after all, we should use the Planning Commission's expertise in this. And one lady wanted to know why, what had ever driven the TDC program in the first place. And it's been so long, it seems like another life, actually. Kurt's nodding his head up and down. My friend and I, Betty Fiscalini, and I attended a conference in Salinas, Visalia, in 1982, and first heard about the Transfer of Development Credit Program, and we said to ourselves, you know, this would be a marvelous way, if we could get it in San Luis Obispo County, to help preserve agricultural land. That was the initial driving force. Unfortunately, as time went by, some folks found loopholes and got them incorporated into the program. And since, you know, that'll always happen with any program, and then it gets everybody all upset. But basically, I think the program is a good thing. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if Supervisor Bianchi just wanted to include the five recommendations of the Planning Commission. There were actually nine. And I'm hoping that if you turn the page...
You can include the other four.
Pardon?
Include the other four.
Including but not limited to all of the Planning Commission recommendations and the staff recommendations.
Why don't we revisit that during the time where we make a motion, and so it's clear to the clerk as where we're heading with this. Your comments, Mr. Patterson?
Okay. Basically, my comments are related to making some recommendations. Do you want those?
Please.
Now? Okay. And I support Supervisor Bianchi's comments regarding including as a foundation the recommendations from the work the Planning Commission did, and I thought we'd made that clear during our previous hearings, but apparently not. And also I just want to suggest on your recommendations, on the staff recommendations, that on number five, where it talks about using TDCs for general plan amendments that can convert ag land to a more intensive use, I would like to see us include other general plan amendments that upzone the property and give more development opportunity. It would create a market, and as many have said today, one of the biggest failings of the current program is that there have not been adequate receiver sites. So I would say any general plan amendment that upzones the property to allow more development, don't limit it just to ag zone land that's being converted. And I would like to put the caveat in there that with the exception of land that is being upzoned to provide affordable housing, because if we tack on that additional cost for a TDC, then we're neutralizing the possibility of using it for affordable or workforce housing, so I'd like to put that caveat in there. Also, the first item in the staff's recommendation is in terms of scope of work, where you talk about reevaluating the number by which you divide to determine the number of credits. I think we need to reevaluate the entire method that we use to determine the number of credits. That formula has gotten us into trouble in the past, and I think maybe we need to look at whether using that formula-based method is the best method. There may be other methods out there that are more suitable. I have a couple of more comments. Again, it's the receiver site issue, I think, that's been most problematic, and we do need to, I think, engage the urbanized areas and the incorporated cities to help us utilize this program. And I would like us to see, I would like us to increase the representation on the committee for the urban representatives, the planning directors, to two rather than just one. And I'm encouraged by the fact that there are a number of very qualified individuals that are interested in serving on it. So I would like to accommodate them. And as has been suggested, I think that the meeting should definitely be open to the public, and that we should allow staff to, where necessary, consult with experts who have experience with TDC programs to come and consult. So if we can include that as well. And that's
Supervisor Lentol.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A reoccurring theme that's come up when we've talked about these in the past has been the concerns for fire safety. And I don't remember which speaker was that came forward, but I certainly don't want to commit CDF to do anything, but I would encourage CDF to be involved in this, and they should be at least invited to see who they would want to send. The issues of fire, the response time, the safety of the roads, the roundabouts, the turnarounds, I think all but about two of these issues have come up in each one of these TDCs we've looked at. So it only makes sense from my perspective to have their input before they come before the board or before you get a little farther down the road to express the concerns that especially county fire has. And I think when you get the city involvement, you're going to get from planning, you're going to get the city fire relationships and the mutual aid. But I do think it's important to invite someone from CDF to be a part of this.
Mr. Rowett.
Thank you. I'm just talking to the clerk about the committee to report this thing.
Microphone.
It's interesting to see that Kirk Cupper would stand up and admit the fact that he was one of the first ones on this thing, and the fact that I've been around here long enough to see that he was on that committee. And I'm just going to take a moment, because what was interesting is that actually when we started this thing, we actually did a land survey. We actually took an inventory of the land available, and much of the areas that are now our problems are were inside those lands that we inventoried that would be good receiver sites. Another person brought up this thing about development rights. There was a long dissertation on whether we should do rights or credits, because rights seemed to mean that they were going to basically have that forever, where credits didn't. So we had the semantical battle on that, and that's why it's called TDCs, not TDRs, but the programs were the same. I was under the assumption when we look at this that all information, whether it be planning commission, or the grand jury, previous committees, and other things, would be made available as reference, because I don't think you can sit down and look at this issue without having all of that in front of you, not any just one specific item. You have to have I always love it when we set up a committee and then we want to add more, because if we want to kill anything, add more members. This is a very large, cumbersome committee as it is, and I can't see that we need to add to it. In Mr. Lentol's case, you have, and there was requests by experts to make testimony. Well, CDF can be that expert and respond to it. I think staff is also experts. These are people that will be responding to the committee's questions. Also, when you start dealing with size of roads and some of those kind of things, those are more into the actual development than the actual transfer itself. Understand that the ordinance that TDC has sets up the mechanism. The ordinance itself does not specifically identify areas to target. It is only the mechanism by which you can apply a TDC. So we're talking about the mechanism. And probably I expect this committee will come out with concepts of appropriate areas. I think it's an open-ended subject, and I think it should be left that way. These are modifications or areas of general discussion. I think there are a lot of issues within that thing, and having sat on that committee before and trying to basically on the recommendations we did was to free up some of the complications in it and to make it more easily understood, that's where we're at today, and I think the committee is going to have one hell of a job. And I think where we're at right now is pretty good, with the fact that all the information and these other staff people can be staff or respond to questions or provide testimony to the committee.
Supervisor Bianchi.
Well, basically, I would agree with most everything Harry said, except I think it's always a good thing when you have a committee or any group looking into something to have a foundation from which to start the discussions. It sort of gels things. It doesn't mean that you absolutely have to stay with it, but it's a good foundation to start, and I think the Planning Commission's recommendations would be a good foundation.
Depends on whether you want the glass half full or the capacity of the glass.
Listen, I want to cut the time down, and if you can cut the time down.
I think I don't disagree with the Planning Commission's recommendation, but I think the grand jury and I think some of the other public testimony and things that have gone on even through our deliberations in front of the board.
Well, they will be included,
but
I'm just saying the Planning Commission can be the foundation.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Either one of you try to make a motion, please.
I'll move that we follow a recommendation of the Blue Ribbon Committee as suggested with the modifications to the criteria or the work scope that involves general plan housing and or general plan amendment issues, and that we bring in the information of Planning Commission and others as part of the basis for this committee.
Second.
So that it will include but not be limited to.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think you can limit this.
Well, I don't think you can either, but I think it would be good to have it in the motion.
Yeah.
Okay. Is the motion clear, Madam Clerk?
Yeah.
We have a motion by Supervisor Ovitz, seconded by Supervisor Lentil. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. With that, we'll move on. I will want to take a short break. We'll be back here at 3:30.
With that, if Madam Clerk will introduce the next item, please.
Next item is item E1. This is a request to approve recommended responses to findings and recommendations contained in the Duran Jury Report on Oak Tree Preservation in San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you. With that, Ms. Brown.
My name is Leslie Brown. I'm with the Administrative Office, and essentially we are asking your board for direction in terms of how you would like to respond. Essentially, there are two questions. Are the existing ordinances and voluntary approach to oak tree protection and preservation sufficient, and therefore the recommendations made by the grand jury will not be implemented, or two, should further study be done by a committee to determine if an ordinance mandating oak tree protection and preservation is recommended, along with some sanctions. And Pat Beck and Ellen Carroll from the Planning and Building Department are here to provide you with some additional information about the protections that are already in place, if you would like to know more about that, or to answer any questions about the potential impact on other priorities being worked on by the department should you decide to establish a committee to do further study and bring recommendations back to your board. So with that,
Ms.
did you want to add
anything? Or Ellen, have anything to add?
Just wanted you to be aware, Pat Beck, County Planning, that if you want information about the current regulations, have questions about the specifics identified in the report, we're here. Ellen Carroll is here from our Environmental Division about specific types of mitigation that we use. If you have questions about where oak tree regulations currently apply or don't, or where we have voluntary programs, and then if you do wish to pursue taking another look at the regulations, we'd like to be involved as they potentially would affect our staffing resources. So we would have some recommendations depending upon the direction that your board may choose to go.
Thank you. Any questions to staff before I go to the public?
None
at this time. We'll go with this. Start with Mr. Greening, followed by Sue Loft.
Eric Greening, and first of all, I'd say that given the options in front of you, I would definitely lean toward option B. What we have now is more or less on a case-by-case basis, haphazardly and not comprehensively. And obviously, all of us have witnessed areas where trees have been lost and the mitigations do not seem to be working. They don't work right away anyway. If you have a 200-year valley oak, there is a tremendous amount of food for wildlife, nesting habitat for birds. There is a tremendous use to the ecosystem that is not replaced with mitigation plantings for a century or more. And the crunch time for the wildlife is now. And so to that extent, even the planting mitigations and so on are leaving a disaster in their wake that it's going to take a long time to recover from. Within option B, the idea of starting a new committee, obviously we keep talking about committees. It seems like every other meeting we're creating committees, and there are, I'm glad to know there are so many willing citizens to be on different committees, and certainly this is something that interests me, but I'm not necessarily offering to take on more committees now. One possible alternative in looking at this is to explicitly add this to the task of the committee that oversees the conservation element update, because I believe you're getting ready to create such a committee, as well as authorize the processing of the update of the conservation element. And if that element doesn't take seriously the issues of conserving our woodland, not just our oaks, but all of our native trees, our shrubs, our forbs, our grasses, if it doesn't take on total habitat conservation, then it's not going to be worth the name. We have the first chance in 32 years to do it right and to get it right. But I don't want the fact that we're going to update the conservation element to be used as an excuse for not giving this specific attention or letting it get lost. So if there's concern about the time of staffing yet another committee or finding the people to serve on yet another committee, this is a sort of an option that addresses the spirit of Alternative B. I do not support Alternative A. Things are not all right now. I appreciate all the efforts that go into education and mitigation, but I also see that from the standpoint of wildlife, they're losing and they're not getting it back for generations of theirs or ours.
Thank you.
Ms. Love, followed by Morgan Rafferty.
Hi, my name is Sue Love. I'm speaking on behalf of PASA Watch.
In the report, the grand jury made a number of important recommendations. One of the recommendations is that the protection and preservation of oaks should be mandated by ordinance in any new construction in all unincorporated areas. Another recommendation is that agricultural land should not be exempt from the protection and preservation of oaks, and protection should be mandated by ordinance. We ask that your board consider adoption of the recommendations of the grand jury. And if not, we ask that your board establish a committee whose charge is to consider the adoption of the grand jury's recommendations regarding oak tree preservation. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rafferty, followed by Mike Bonheim.
Good afternoon. I'm Morgan Rafferty. Hello again. We also want to encourage you to follow the grand jury recommendations and protect and preserve the oaks. We believe it should be mandated by ordinance because the voluntary program really isn't protecting the oaks properly. And we also believe that the agricultural land should not be exempt from protection and preservation of oaks. And as stated in the grand jury report, the native trees provide clean air, maintain the watershed, and sustain habitat for the wildlife and promote biodiversity. And we ask that you adopt the recommendation of the grand jury and establish ordinances, and short of that, set up some kind of stakeholder committee to study the need for an oak tree preservation ordinance and bring the recommendations back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bonheim, followed by Chuck Pritchard.
Good afternoon, Board Chairman Cacho. My name is Mike Bonheim. I'm a self-employed third-generation rancher in the Adelaide area, west of Paso Robles, on the same ranch that my grandfather, Walter, acquired in 1918. I consider myself and my family good land stewards, and we've done an awful lot of great things, real neat things on our ranch over the years, more than I can espouse to in 3 minutes. We have put a conservation easement on our land, forever retiring the commercial residential development potential on that land. And that was through the TDC program, by the way. We have an open-door policy on the ranch where we maintain an open invitation to anyone who is interested or concerned regarding my family's native tree stewardship practices, and have done so now for quite some time. Most recently, we hosted the University of California on a tour to the ranch, which was part of an Oak Woodlands workshop held here in San Luis Obispo, where over 30 University of California professors and extension professionals toured and were able to see firsthand my family's oak tree stewardship practices. And they left the ranch overwhelmingly in support of my family's management. The voluntary program in the county is working. A non-voluntary program is not going to bolster my family's ability to manage our land better. It will, however, diminish our management flexibility and creativity in managing that land, which is probably two of the greatest things in agriculture that promotes success and sustainability. The voluntary program is working. We need to create incentives for landowners to be good native tree stewards, not disincentives. The voluntary program is working, and it would be my wish that we continue with the same program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I ask Mr.
Sure.
a question?
Mr. Ron,
Mike. Before you and I have a question, you have a little bit of time left. But recently you received an award for your works as far as thinning with the oaks and management out there. Could you just briefly take the remaining 30 seconds or 45 seconds and talk about that and how that's benefited the wildlife and the habitat on your property?
Well, we manage our ranch holistically. I have close to 17 years of a holistic management practice in education. I've spent an awful lot of my time and a lot of money attending several prestigious schools over the years to learn how to make decisions holistically. And the two forms of production in our holistic goal that we manage for is commercial livestock and hunting. And are the very futuristic vision that we have for our resources, our lands, our resource base, or our landscape, if you will, is to promote diversity and abundance that goes along with that diversity. And this is part of it. It's part the thinning, the planting that we do, the oak tree regeneration promotion that we do on the ranch in different areas, all takes us toward that goal. Our goals, any decision we make is tested toward our goal, and if it passes the goal, we take action on that decision, and from that moment on, we assume that we're wrong, and we monitor for the first indicator that we are wrong. And we do not, as much as we try to make a decision that's the best one we can, we don't assume that we're right. And so we monitor for the first indicator that tells us we made a wrong decision. The tree thinning and the planting and the regeneration all takes us toward supporting our two forms of production, which is commercial livestock and hunting.
Mr. Bonham, before you leave, Mr. Patterson has a question or a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bonheim, I have been to your ranch, and I've seen what you've been doing with your Oak Woodland Management Program and your habitat improvement. And I know you've been doing it for a number of years, and you're beginning to make changes and modify and adapt as you learn. And I think it's exceptional that you're doing that. But what I'm curious to know is, I mean, you're sort of at the leading edge of this. Do you know of other ranches in the area that are also doing this? Any idea of programs like yours in the county?
No, I don't. And, Jim, I'd like to make it very clear that as successful as we have been doing what we've done, I would not just willy-nilly recommend that anyone and everyone do what we do. We're all individuals. We all have our own commonalities, but we all, what beyond that is what makes us unique and what makes us individualistic. And our ranches are no different. Our ranches are all managed by different owners and managers with different goals, and the resources on each ranch are unique. And go along, and those resources come along with their own unique problems to have to address. You can literally have two ranches side by side that have a whole different set of resources to manage or to consider. And you can have literally areas within a ranch that are different also. And so we have from one project area on our ranch to the next, there's commonalities, but each one is also different, too. And that's why I think it's short-sighted to try to manage or to establish management policy with a one-size-fits-all cookbook approach.
Thank you.
Good.
Mr. Pritchard, followed by Andrew Christie.
Good afternoon. My name is Chuck Pritchard. I'm a fourth-generation rancher out in the Carissa Plains Bitterwater area. So, no, I do not have oak trees. I've spent about the last 30 years of my life in the resource work, both on the local, regional, state, and national level, serving on various committees and various boards. An answer partially to Mr. Patterson's question, I'll give you a list of names. George Work family, Varian family, Blanchard family, Sinton family, Bonheim family, Mano family, Friend family, Lewis family, Morrison family, Hurst family, and on and on. They're all outstanding managers in their own way because they all work on different environments. So, no, you can't take necessarily what works on one ranch and pick it up and move it someplace else. But these folks have all been awarded either on the regional, state, or national level for their resource work. So, yes, there is a very, very vibrant history of good resource management in this county. I want to make a couple of broad comments. When I was a child, a long time ago, most everyone had some kind of a connection with the land. A grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, someone that lived on a farm or a ranch. That is pretty much history. Most of the population now that have moved into this area have come from either LA or San Francisco, the two major metropolitan areas. A lot of these folks live in town. A whole lot of them live on ranchettes, anywhere from a half acre on up. Some of these people want to have a horse. Some of these people want to have a vineyard. Some of these people want various things. The one thing in commonality with a great number of these folks is they are urban people that do not have a history with the land. The problem is not oak trees. The problem is not horses. The problem is not vineyards. The problem is lack of knowledge. For my concern with the resource conservation districts, the problem is soil and water. Without those two elements, nothing is going to survive. Also, if you look at an urban setting, are we talking about dense populations? Are we talking about more diverse populations? Are we talking about towns right now like Paso Robles of 27,000 that are talking about being 40,000? How's that going to happen? And it's going to take a lot of oak trees out. It's going to also give us a real problem as far as water is concerned. There's a publication which you have in your hands, or it's in your library. Central Coast Sustainable Landscapes Project took place in 1995. Discussed this whole issue. And this encompassed a study over a year that encompassed four different counties. I encourage you to look at this thing because it talks in great depth about oak trees in this whole Central Coast area. I would also encourage you to look at a publication called Fire in the Sierra Nevadas, because the problem is not vegetation as far as trees. The problem is loss of grasslands as far as natural wildlife habitat is concerned. It's been proven, and it's the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christie, followed by Robert Sparding.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. Andrew Christie, Chapter Coordinator for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo. It is indeed the case that many people want to do many different things, and that's a pretty good reason to have an oak tree ordinance. This is not an ordinance that would be about hog-tying good stewards of the land. It's about bringing not-so-good stewards of the land up to that level. I'm reminded last September we came before the Planning Commission when it was considering the state Oak Woodlands Conservation Bill and taking the trouble to estimate what it costs to replace an oak tree. And they were discussing potting soils, the price of the pot, the price of fertilizer, the cost of labor at the nursery, and price of water. And they came up with a figure of about $660 to replace an oak tree. And we reminded them that the cost of replacing an oak tree is not the same thing as the value of an oak tree. The value of an oak tree is measured primarily in its value in terms of ecosystem services. How much wildlife habitat does it provide? How much oxygen is produced? How much nitrogen is fixed in soil? Flood and erosion control? Global warming gas is curbed? And what would be the cost of replacing all of these services if the oak tree was not there? And while mitigation is a good thing, depending on circumstances, and certainly when it's the best you can do, and you have to replace a 200-year-old oak tree with four saplings, four yearlings, that's what you have to do. But in so many other cases, mitigation, if you have an equivalent of an ordinance to actually keep that tree in the ground, that is the way to go, and that is the way you maintain the value of ecosystem services. And that's why we would recommend that the board take to heart and adapt the recommendations of the grand jury. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sparding, followed by Jerry Bunin.
I'm Bob Sparling. I'm retired from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Animal Health Division. I've been in this area from Santa Clara County to Ventura County for 50 years, surveying livestock for health problems. I've seen most of the ranches that will come before you as being noticed as part of an overall problem. I see a lot of commonality, if that's the word, in these counties on the coast, that of brush, rocks, oak trees, grazing land, and a lot of people eager to take part in a Central Coast experience. It looks like this is coming to a head right now, those different factors. But we still have to deal with the environment. There are ranches and pieces of land on this coast that will bear no more development. All of their good for in production is brush and rocks to hold the existing soil and land in place for a wildlife benefit. There are other parts of it that can and have been managed for many years. And my going up and down the coast to find available resources for animals to stay healthy on and how they're to keep healthy. I've noticed those ranches. Some have been handled wisely and well, and others have gone downhill. But those are more a product of not the individual managers, but of conditions outside their control. Now, to think that we can come before you and come up with answers that you can work on is really pushing insight out of proportion. For years, this has been going on right on those very areas in this coast and under the environment that we've had to work with. And the people that are there now and have been there are really the homegrown experts that we should be appealing to for reasons in this matter to go ahead. Anything that we could do at this point in a judicial manner would be out of proportion. It should stay in a legislative form as yourself to invite discussions and people to come forth from the public that have been on these ranches, know these ranches and what their capability is. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bunin, followed by Jackie Crabb.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I work in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. Santa Barbara County attempted, or they actually have implemented, a oak tree preservation ordinance. Before you go down that road, you really should talk to them about it. They could be a model of everything not to do. It was bitter. It was divisive. It was time-consuming. It was expensive. It was counterproductive. Hasn't worked at all. I like oak trees. So, just before you go down that way, I really think you need to determine if you have a problem. I haven't heard that you have a big problem with oak trees in this county, that you need to change what you're doing. Then if you decide you have a problem, you really need to decide if you can address it better by regulations trying to get a few bad apples and harming all the good apples. Or if it makes more sense to spend your money and your resources, your staff time, on public education and voluntary compliance. And then you need to decide if you're going to hire the kind of staff necessary to monitor people who don't want you to catch them. All those things are going to be players in whatever decision you're going to make. So I'm always a big fan of voluntary compliance. I think you should think that people are good people, not bad people. But government tends to like regulations. So if you're going to go that direction, the Home Builders Association would definitely like to have a seat at the table and be one of the stakeholders in whatever you're going to draft for an ordinance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Crabb, followed by Joy Fitzhugh.
Get this down low enough. Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Crabb. I'm with the Farm Bureau, and I'm also a member of the Native Tree Committee. We were very surprised when we discovered this grand jury report had moved forward, and it was recommending an oak tree ordinance. The unfortunate part is that the Native Tree Committee, who was formed after the board adopted our resolution, we were the committee that was formed to help move forward. And I'd like to put on record that we are the committee that is the educational and the outreach committee for that resolution. Some of the things that we've been doing is gathering and disseminating acorns to our landowners. The last number that we had, and that was back in 2003. I know it's not current, but we were up to 6,500. And we're also working with some of the high schools on getting them to also grow the acorns out and getting them out to the public. We have a newsletter. We helped draft the Oak Woodlands Management Plan that was approved by you. And we are the first plan to be adopted by any jurisdiction in the state since passage of the 2001 California Oak Woodlands Conservation Act. We were awarded a $108,000 grant from the California Wildlife Conservation to continue our educational efforts and do tailgates and workshops. Last month, a study was released from our committee to help assist landowners on how to manage their oak woodlands. Included in the study, it was discovered through a survey that 60% of the landowners oppose any type of our ordinance, oak woodland ordinance. As Chuck Pritchard had outlined, we have many recognitions in our county with state, national, and local. I won't go through that list.
Can we do more? Absolutely, we can do more. But we have concerns of the report. First of all, they're exempting the cattle grazing, and yet not the vineyards. And we question that because it was based on perception. Many of our cattle folks also grow wine grapes, and we're not sure how that would be perceived. The other is the lack of data for anyone to move forward with such a local ordinance. Also, looking at the agricultural land, we see that it is physically and financially impossible for any enforcers to be out there and to be able to regulate the whole county. And therefore, that is why we are pursuing education and outreach. We also are concerned that an ordinance would impact our efforts as a committee, and that things such as collecting data will be very hard for us to get once a tree is regulated. Our landowners would question whether giving any information out. What we recommend is that if there is no funding, and that's the first thing you need to discover, if there is no funding, why move forward? And if there is funding, look to education and outreach efforts such as ours. Thank you.
Thank you. But before you leave, Mr. Patterson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Crowell, I was just curious. I have talked to members of your committee, and they've been involved for a number of years. One of the things I was curious about in your dissemination of oaks and your planting of oaks and your outreach, is that related to any sector of the society? Is it mostly delegated or directed towards rural and ranch lands, or are you dealing with developers also in the urban environment and providing education to them and oak seedlings to them as well?
Our main focus has been towards the landowners more in the rural area. That does not limit us. And so when we, some of our members go out and gather acorns, and at our meetings they all decide, okay, who's going to take what and let's get it out, and who's going to go to the high schools and get it out. Now, where the high schools disseminate, I'm not clear. That's not the project I'm working on. But we know that many of them are going out to the landowners, and we are talking to ourselves. And we as an industry are very concerned on not only preserving and protecting, but also planting of trees. And that is another factor that's not addressed.
Have you been able to follow up to see how successful these plantings have been over the years?
No, and that's when I said, can we do more? Absolutely. And if you do have funding, that we'd like to see it in more of this research, this data collecting, and this education outreach, because we feel that in agriculture is the way to go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Fitchu, followed by Beverly Jing.
Good afternoon, Joy Fitzhugh. And I'm going to do a real quick reading of Jim Sinton's letter because he wanted to be here, but he was unable to, so I may speak awfully fast. Just a decade ago, I was appointed to this board to chair a committee to investigate and possibly draft an ordinance to protect native trees of San Luis Obispo County. The committee was comprised of a diverse group of individuals, including farmers, ranchers, environmentalists, developers, contractors, public officials, and other public-spirited citizens. We met many times over several months, and many of us believed that an ordinance was the only way we could stop an uninformed and unconcerned from cutting our native trees. We struggled long and hard to devise a way that would actually protect native trees without being so onerous that it would create hostility, evasion, disincentive those who wanted to plant native trees or might be afraid of unnecessarily encumbering their land in the future. The Native Tree Ordinance Committee encountered numerous obstacles to a sensible ordinance, and I'm just going to give one example. How do we craft an ordinance, a protection ordinance that makes sense from Carissa Plains to the Adelaide? The fact is that even though the Ordinance Committee tried really hard to write a sound, thoughtful, fair ordinance that would allow agriculture to operate fairly easily with the ordinance, we couldn't do it. I have participated in the San Luis Obispo County Native Tree Committee from the beginning, and we have worked hard to encourage native tree plantings and discourage the unnecessary cutting of trees. Despite our efforts, my role with the Ordinance Committee, nearly all of my fellow committee members and I never even knew of the grand jury investigation until it appeared in the paper. How can a report be credible if those of us who work on this matter constantly are not even contacted? I believe that the grand jury report lacks thoroughness or credibility and should be treated as uninformed and misinformed. If we really want to know whether there is a problem with the native trees of San Luis Obispo County, we should pay for a baseline aerial survey of the trees of the county and monitor for changes. Of course, there will continue to be a few bad actors, and we on the Native Tree Committee are aware of at least a few, but we believe that there aren't a lot of these people and that we can use public pressure and sound information to reduce their number. In the meantime, we are working with schools and groups to plant more native trees than are lost each year. I therefore urge the board to continue with the existing voluntary program while considering developing a knowledge baseline that will enable us to better evaluate our native tree situation. On my own part, I'd like to give you a little personal information on the fact that on our family's ranch at the turn of the 20th century, whole mountains were logged for firewood. At this point, and clear cut for firewood that went to Cayucas. At this point, these mountains have all regrown, the oaks have all regrown. So when you start thinking about, have we lost tree cover? Let's not just think about the last 5 years. We've got hundreds of acres that have oaks on them today that didn't have them at the turn of the last century. Thank you.
Thank you. Probably followed by Bill White.
I'm Beverly Ging, and I'm here to talk about the Oak Trail project at Santa Margarita Ranch. I'm involved in the Native Tree Committee as well, and I'm also involved in a number of other groups, but the views that I'm going to express are my own. The Oak Trail at Santa Margarita Ranch was developed after the board adopted the Oak Woodlands Management Plan, and we were successful in getting funding from the Wildlife Conservation Board, Jackie discussed. We were able to get that funding, and my part of it has been working with Santa Margarita Ranch to develop an educational trail that allows all of the students at Santa Margarita Elementary School to have very unique hands-on opportunities to learn about our oak woodlands ecology, biology, and also about land conservation and stewardship within the context of a working cattle ranch. This has been a tremendous opportunity for Santa Margarita students, and after completing our first year of the program, the response from teachers and students has been absolutely overwhelming. If you were to go and talk to the teachers and the principal and the students at that school, you would not believe the positive things they have to say about this program. The program is funded for 3 years, and I am a big believer that we can get a lot more done through education than regulation. And if there is funding available, I would like to see it go into programs such as the trail at Santa Margarita Ranch, because I think that we can get a whole lot more done by working with people than trying to regulate them. I think that regulations are kind of like pesticides, that sometimes they're absolutely necessary. Pesticides are not a bad thing when you need them, but you better be sure that they're absolutely necessary because they come with an awful lot of unintended consequences. They're extremely expensive, and we cannot afford this particular ordinance right now. We haven't done enough. It's like Jackie said, there's so much more that we could be doing if you've got the funding, support, education. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I have some...
We can pass it around for you. Thank you. Mr. White, followed by Susan Harvey.
Bill White, Templeton. I'd like to briefly outline my thoughts on the county's current insufficient oak tree preservation efforts. Number one, Chapter 22.56 of the Land Use Ordinance, tree preservation is ineffective and toothless at best, obfuscation at worst. It should be renamed the Tree Removal Ordinance. Number two, the 4-to-1 mitigation ratio enshrined by county planning is an embarrassment. There's not even a nod towards equity in this mitigation policy. Assuming all four sprigs were to survive, which is unrealistic, not even our great-grandchildren will live long enough to see these trees grow into the same majestic oaks that are destroyed for ephemeral building projects. Number three, Paso Robles has recognized the values of iconic oaks to our area and has instituted a relatively strong oak tree preservation ordinance. Paso Robles' ordinance demonstrates that development and strong protection measures can coexist. Given Paso Robles' focus on growth, any time the county is lagging Paso Robles in development-related regulation, it needs to seriously reassess its position. Despite planning staff's claim that its review process provides protection to oak trees, the reality of the situation is that oak tree preservation doesn't stand in the way of development projects. Zoning clearance is relatively easily obtained. In rare cases where it is not obtained, penalties to accidental removal are minimal when assessed at all and represent an immaterial cost of business for developers. Additionally, there's no oak tree protection in the ag land use category. This may be historically justified, but it rounds out a complete lack of oak protection in unincorporated SLO County. In summary, the grand jury report denoted 7 findings and 5 recommendations. Most of planning staff's recommended responses for your board are of the "we don't have enough information" or more analysis is required" variety. This may be an honest response, but it sadly demonstrates that the county has not focused on oak tree removal issues and the clear need for more stringent protection measures. The current voluntary approach to oak tree protection is ineffective and insufficient. I request that your board move towards authorizing a real and effective oak tree preservation and protection ordinance. Thank you.
Mr. White, before you leave.
Mr. White, if I could ask you a question. You said that 4-1 wasn't an adequate replacement ratio. Do you have an opinion, or have you got information that says we should have a different number?
Conceptually, as I said, I think there's no equity in replacing an iconic oak that may be 200 to 300 years old and provide, you know, a feeling for the culture of this county with 4 little sprigs that it will take 100 or 200 years to get there if they survive. I'm not sure whether the mitigation ratio ought to be 10-1, 100-1, or perhaps it ought to be a cash mitigation ratio instead with, you know, larger oaks put in rather than sprigs. I just think the current mitigation effort, you know, just doesn't pass the merit test.
Thank you.
Ms. Harvey, followed by Maria Lorca.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I think that in some ways we're jumping the gun here even in discussing any of this, because I think that the county needs to, instead of looking at oaks in any way as an impediment to economic growth or any other aspect of economics, I think we need to make an assessment of the economic value of the trees to the county. I think a well-done outside study of what value these trees have to our county needs to happen before we can move ahead on making these kinds of decisions, because we really don't have the answers to this. I mean, when I personally look at an oak tree that's a couple of hundred years old, I'm in complete awe that something could survive in the wild like that. And I don't think, however, that necessarily has any bearing on what the economic value or resource is to this county of that tree. We need to find out things like how are the trees work as a sink for greenhouse gases, how they affect, you know, clean the air that we breathe here. And when you're considering like this hot spell that we've had for a long time, I mean, I think we have a whole more window of appreciation that these trees have survived and do bring us the values that they bring us. Anyway, I'd also like to, you know, in the Paso Robles area has an oak tree ordinance, and the original oak tree ordinance was started by Supervisor Ovid when he was on the Paso Robles City Council, you know, in recognition of one value of the oak tree to the city of Paso Robles. And it has been expanded to preserve more oaks around the city. And I think that the issues are so, there are so many issues in what these trees provide to us. I really would like you to think about not necessarily committee, but going towards getting the assessment that we need to know what value these are, what resource they are for the county, and then we can, from that standpoint, we can move on to decide, okay, what are we going to do about it? Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Lorca?
Maria Lorca from Creston, and if you live in the North County, thinking about the shade of a big old oak tree is a great thing. I would ask that you do everything you can to figure out ways to keep the big old trees in the ground. And this afternoon you've heard lots of great ideas. There's information out there. It just needs to be pulled together. Chuck Pritchard had ideas for resources. Steve Sinton's idea of a baseline aerial survey is outstanding. And as Susan Harvey said, we just need to pull all this information together and then see what we can do to protect the trees. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. That was the last request to speak. At this time, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board members. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask our Assistant Planning Director, Pat Beck, to just briefly describe what we have in place now in the way of oak tree protection and what currently doesn't have any protection. I know there's some kind of building permits that aren't covered, and there are other types that are. So if you could explain that, I would appreciate it.
Well, our ordinance does differentiate between urban areas as opposed to the rural areas.
Mrs. Beck, your name for the record.
Pat Beck, County Planning. And the regulations don't apply in the rural areas unless you're doing a discretionary project. So if you're doing a building permit or a ministerial project, there is no tree removal requirement, so there's no automatic replacement that would occur like would occur if you require if you got a tree removal permit in the urban areas. So since agriculture is more often than not part of the rural areas, if they are removed as part of agriculture, there's not a requirement through the county. We did work in bringing forward to you from the Tree Preservation Committee the Oak Woodlands Management Voluntary Program, and that really came forward as a way so that groups who were interested in providing educational opportunities and expanding voluntary compliance would have access to grants, and as you heard, have been successful in getting grants. And we're one of the first programs. I didn't realize we were the first program. So that came out of your board's decision when the previous ordinance was considered to work towards voluntary compliance, and that required that your board adopt that program in order for us to be recognized for purposes of funding.
Okay. Thank you very much. At this point, I would like to go ahead and comment on what I've heard this afternoon in public testimony. And one of the things that I heard consistently from a number of speakers is that we need more information, and that's the one thing that that the grand jury also indicated, is that they just don't have enough information to make a decision. And in fact, they recommended that we establish a committee to do a variety of things, and in talking with Ms. Beck about the possibility of doing that, she said that that would require taking a planner away from another project that has already been incorporated into their work plan for the year and may also require additional funding. And I'm certainly not a proponent of doing that, because I think that we've adopted what we want our planning commission, or excuse me, our planning department to be working on here this next year. But Mr. Pritchard and Mr. Sparling both alluded to one of the larger problems I think that we're facing in San Luis Obispo County regarding oak woodland preservation, and that is more people are coming here. And they keep coming here, and they're going to keep coming here. And we are going to continue to have a problem with growth and development. And I think where the real problem exists in San Luis Obispo County is not on our ranches and in our rural ag lands. It's where we're encountering urban development. While a number of the incorporated cities actually have tree or native tree or oak woodland preservation ordinances, the county really isn't adequately covered in the urbanized areas of San Luis Obispo County. And there is a distinct difference between agricultural impacts and urban impacts, and I think we ought to take a look at that. And in looking at Mr. Sinton's letter, I think he hit it on the head. First of all, he has sort of the same take on the grand jury, this past year's grand jury, and I understand they do differ every year, but he didn't have a a lot of glowing things to say about it, because one of the organizations that's doing most with Oak Woodland education and management, those members weren't even talked to. But one of the things that Mr. Senton said that hit home is that we really don't know where we are with Oak Woodlands. Mr. Bonheim has, I think, an approximately 7,000-acre ranch. Well, there's about 70,000 acres of Oak Woodland in San Luis Obispo County. So there's a lot of ground out there that needs to be looked after, so to speak. And what Mr. Senton said, and I've known Steve for decades, actually, and I appreciate what he and his family are doing on his ranch. They are doing some good innovative things, but he says what we don't have and what we need is to develop a knowledge baseline that will better enable us to evaluate our native tree situation, and that is one of the things that Ms. Crabb said as well, that we need more data, more information. And living and working with the Atascadero community, we have done just that. We are in the process of establishing a baseline of our oak woodlands, so we'll be able to track over time the impact that we're having and better manage the oak resource that we do have. And I think, I'm not proposing that we go forward with an ordinance right now. I think the county's been there and done that, and we don't know if we need to do that, but we know we have significant oak losses due to development, and we need to get our arms around that. And rather than directing our planning staff to take on another project, what I had proposed that we do, because I honestly do feel that we shouldn't let this issue slide. It's been brought to our attention that there are some problems in San Luis Obispo County. What I would like to do, and I did give each of my colleagues a memo that I sent to Ms. Beck this morning regarding how I felt we could address some of these issues that were raised in the grand jury report, and do it in a very time-efficient and comprehensive and inexpensive way, is to form a little fact-finding committee, much of like Mr. Lenthal has done with some of the projects that he's been working on, to just gather the facts and the data and then bring that back to the board in a short period of time so we can act from a position of having information and being knowledgeable about the issues. And I have outlined some specific things taken from the grand jury report that I think we need to look at. And I've also suggested a membership for the committee that covers a broad sector of the community. And the charge would be simply to gather the information that is lacking and come back and present that to the board, and then let the board determine what action to take. And if you want to quickly review that, what I propose is that we establish a committee, and I would be willing to head that committee up, and I and my staff will do the work of organizing the committee and facilitating it so the burden is not put on the planning department. What we would do are the following. We would quantify the oak resources in the unincorporated area of the county. We would evaluate current policies and procedures that apply to oak protection, preservation, and mitigation. We would evaluate current policies and procedures to enforce oak mitigation measures and track their effectiveness. We would assess the effectiveness of voluntary protection, preservation, and enhancement programs, including education and outreach. And we would present our findings to the board by the end of this year and recommend actions to develop procedures and policies to best ensure the long-term protection and preservation of San Luis Obispo County's oak woodland resources. And who I propose be represented on this committee would be myself, a representative from the Native Tree Committee, and I put County Tree Committee, but I'm told they call themselves the Native Tree Committee, the Oak Tree Protection Committee of EcoSlow, which was involved in doing a countywide survey of individuals relative to their feelings about oaks, a representative from the UC Cooperative Extension Service, and they have a natural resource specialist who is an oak expert, a representative from the Agricultural Liaison Committee, a representative from the building industry, and one representative from the public at large. That would be a 7-person committee that would meet over the course of the next 3 months to put all of this information together, bring it back to the board so we can see where we are with oak woodland management in San Luis Obispo County. And what that is, we could go forward with our response to the grand jury and just modify item B, where we say the recommendation requires further study, and this committee would provide that study and information and bring that back to the board by the end of the year. And that's what I think that we ought to do to move this forward.
Supervisor Patterson, you have agriculture included, but I don't know, within their organization, if the Vineyards and the Cattlemen and the Farm Bureau has room, or if we were to go this route, if there is room to add a member from Farm Bureau and Cattlemen's Association.
Well, I wanted the ag community to be represented. You know, I don't know the best way to do that other than Ag Liaison has members of all of those organizations on their committee.
Do you?
We have
Well, want to come forward, and I'm also looking at the Vineyards, how would it impact their industry if they need to be part of this organization.
And they, too, are representative on Ag Liaison.
Yeah, Ag Liaison does have a fairly large, the Board of Supervisors created the Joy Fitzhugh Farm Bureau, I'm sorry. And there's Cattlemen Farm Bureau. Each supervisor's district has an agricultural representative. There's a representative from each of the RCDs. There's a financial representative, ag finance representative. There's a public, an environmental representative. So there is a broad spectrum. It doesn't necessarily mean that that individual is in a certain type of ag.
Okay, thank you. And the building industry, is that the organization that Mr. Bunin is involved with?
Well, many people could apply, and, you know, we would want a representative from the building industry, and that could certainly be the Home Builders Association. And he mentioned that he would like to do that.
Okay.
So I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you. Supervisor Ovid, then we'll go to administrators. Mr. Edge.
Thank you. I wanted to clarify one thing that yes, Pastor Oval is the first one to put up a tree ordinance, but understand at that time period that we put a tree ordinance up to define the tree. And it wasn't necessarily to protect them, although that was one of the intentions. The other was to define the tree so that if it was removed, we knew what value the removal would be and what that would be to in terms of replacement. So there's been modifications to that over the last 25 years since we put that together. It wasn't this panacea I think everybody's trying to make it out to. The only suggestion I have, I don't have a problem with the suggestions that Mr. Patterson brought up in terms of things that need to be done. I think he forgot to put in the word baseline back in that thing, because that seems to be the basis of the fact that many of the people spoke that the grand jury probably didn't go into and get as much information as they should have. And I'm trying to be nice about it. But I think I would like to shortcut designing a new committee and basically just go back to our slow native tree committee, who basically have been working on this thing for, I think, somewhere about the last 8 years. And they have much of the makeup that's being asked for already there in that native tree, and allow them the ability to come back with us for a program to maybe look at that baseline and see where we can work on it. We don't have to go reinvent people and get them up to speed. I know, if I'm not mistaken, the Ag Extension is on that committee, isn't it? Pretty much everybody that's your recommendations already on that committee, and probably would be much faster to go ahead with that committee than try to adopt a new one.
Well, I don't know. I would prefer to have a committee that is broader based, and there would be representation from the native tree committee.
Can I ask a question?
I don't know that they actually have representatives from all of those specific sectors.
I think they do, because when we set this up quite a...
Well, I know, but...
I got Steve Sinton on it, I know that much.
Well.
I could, you know, Jackie, if you're out there, you want to tell us what the makeup of that committee is again? Because, my argument here is redesign something that we already have.
Okay, I'll give it my best shot. Now, this is old. Some people have been active and then faded. Some new people are coming in. But we are very diverse. And this one, when we put the Oak Woodlands Management Plan together back in 2004, we had Marilyn and Glenn Britton, Dick Montague, who's no longer here in the county, and he was the one who spearheaded most of this, Beverly Ging, Mike Eisensee, who was with UC Cooperative Extension, who is now with Ag Commissioner. So we do have UC, we do have Ag Commissioner, Wayne Jensen, Royce Larson, more UC folks. That's where we get our research. That's where the survey, the funding, the grant money we received. We've got a lot of information now that we can move forward on how to educate our members, or our landowners, I should say. Tim O'Keefe, Ben Parker with the CDF, Steve Sitton, Carl Strebe, Bill TG, UC, Eleanor Truscio, Cattlewomen, Bill Whitecamp, UC, Dan Westergaard, he's with the grape industry, and of course we have broadened it too. I mean, there's more people. We have representative from the Atascadero Native Tree Association on there. I mean, we're not closing the door. Rick Hawley was there for a while but didn't like when we were working on this, didn't approve of it, and we haven't seen him back since. But we're not restrictive, but our focus is really trying to educate and get to the landowners who have the oak woodlands. So it's.
I think the only one missing from Mr. Patterson's recommendation is building industry.
Right.
And his office, and he's willing to facilitate the group, I guess, and there's got to be a marriage there. Mm-hmm.
We also have someone from the Santa Barbara County Ag Commissioner, so they've been keeping us abreast of what's going on in Santa Barbara and what's going on in the agricultural arena. And so we're learning a lot from Santa Barbara. So we don't go down that path.
Yeah. It seems like if we have Mr. Patterson join the group, then.
Well, except I think this is a focused effort, and we need to get it done in 3 months. And, you know, I know Tim O'Keefe and Tina Salter, and I've been to the Native Tree Committee meetings in the past, and I know the membership really does fluctuate quite a bit, and there's a lot more people there, and I wanted to keep this efficient and concise and representative. And, frankly, I would like to go ahead and convene this and just get it done rather than try to fold it into this larger organization and get it done in 3 months, which is really, or actually 4 months, which we're facing. And we would have to recruit another member from, you know, the building industry.
Right.
Also. And
this is strictly fact-finding.
Right. Right. That's what we want to do. Or that's what I'd like to do, because I don't think we have enough information as a board to really respond to what our needs are here. I think it's time that we gather that information and move forward with it, and I think this is a very efficient and effective way of doing that. And I do appreciate what your committee's doing, but I do, you know, think it's really too big and unwieldy to do what we're trying to do here with this. I mean, that's my feeling.
Okay, let me go to Mr. H.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to offer appropriate language when you've settled your committee direction, appropriate language to, as a response to the grand jury report, frame it, but obviously we need to settle whether you're going to establish a new committee or use an existing committee. But once you've done that, I can give you the language that would fit.
Ms. Bianchi?
I don't know that it requires board action for Supervisor Patterson to establish a committee.
It's recognized that way.
Yeah, I know it's recognized, but you know, I've established a couple of task forces that have, you know, been doing fabulous work, and I just did it. I didn't realize I needed to come to the board and do it.
Well, it would be nice to work under the auspices of the board. As I said in my report, we're not putting the burden on planning because they certainly have enough to do, but we will need to utilize planning for part of our information gathering and for support. So I think if we have the board's direction to do that, then they would be more inclined to engage in that effort as well.
Mr. Wright.
The board would have to actually take a formal action, in my view, on establishing a committee or utilize a committee. In terms of responding to the grand jury report, you have three options that you'll recall. We will implement, in terms of recommendations, we will implement, we will not implement, or the item requires further study and we will report back within 6 months. So I guess you could leave it at that, simply say the recommendation requires further study and we'll report back in 6 months and not say how you're going to further study it. But I think the implication is that you will say we'll establish a committee or we'll ask staff or whatever it is, or we'll ask Supervisor Patterson or whatever your pleasure is, and that we specify that in the response to the grand jury.
Mr. Patterson, a question. When you said the local native garden committee is composed of all the others that I mentioned, but you're not opening that to their entire membership.
Well, anybody can attend the meetings. They will be open, but I think we need to have representatives from the different sectors. I mean, this could spiral into a committee of 30 or 40 people if we just say the Native Committee, Tree Committee is going to do it, because their membership is wide open. And I just wanted to gather the information, bring it back to the board, and act from a basis of knowledge and information.
What I heard from Mrs. King today, that because of her efforts and her organization, they were able to bring more funding and do some more work. And she belongs to the organization, but if she is not able to participate, that's one information that we won't have.
Well, no, we will have a representative from that committee that will be telling us
what
they did.
But if it's not that particular person...
Well, I think the committee knows what the committee's doing, I would assume. I mean, if Beverly was the representative, or Jackie, or Bill T.G., or whomever, I think they should know what they're doing. I mean, it's like saying cattlemen's, we need them all there in order to know what they're all doing. I don't know that we do.
No, the reason I asked the question, because when I said... with the existing, added some names as organizations, Cattlemen's, Farm Bureau, Vineyards. So you mentioned that they're all included in this Native Tree Committee.
Right.
But they're not all coming to your meeting as a recognized organization that you want to put together.
Well, I was wanting a representative from agriculture, and that's why I suggested the Ag Liaison, somebody that they could select that networks with all of those people. We could have representatives from each one of those if the board decides that that's what they want to do.
I personally prefer that, because last time...
So you would like to add Cattlemen's and Farm Bureau?
Last time we had you shared in front of us, the Ag Liaison and Farm Bureau weren't in agreement. So that doesn't really tell me that they're always on the same page, and I want to hear the difference of opinions.
Well, rather than Ag Liaison, do you want specific...
No, I would like to see the Ag Liaison member there, but I also like to see the member from the Farm Bureau, from the Cattlemen's.
Okay, you got it.
And a member from the Vineyard, because those are all industries that can be impacted.
We're starting, if I might, and again, I'm not belittling the fact of what Mr. Patterson's asking be done. I'm just saying that when you start adding to what Mr. Patterson wants, these committee, you've got it sitting over there already. Let me go back. When I look at the Native Society right now, and you've got UC Extension, you've got UC Davis, beyond the Extension, you've got both agricultural, you've got environmental, you've got Santa Barbara County, you've got the Atascadero City representative sitting there. You've got a good representation of what you want to accomplish without having to go out and reinvent it. And what I'm hearing now is all of a sudden, well, let's start adding this and let's start adding that, and pretty soon we're going to be up to that committee. And I think it's already there. And I think that you still can take the lead and go with that committee and get back in the 6 months and we challenge that committee. I think there's a lot more information that they already have that's probably not been expressed today, and I think you can get that from them very quick.
Plus, if it's open to the public, and I think under your leadership and willingness to facilitate, they can all be included.
Yeah.
So, let me ask the spokesperson for the Native Tree Committee then, if representatives from whoever that is, do you have representatives from all of these entities in your organization, and who are they?
The one they didn't have was a building.
These are active members.
The other thing that makes this complicated, and I know you're struggling with, as we are, is that some of us wear numerous hats. And so we're on a lot of committees, and we have a lot of representation. The reason our committee was formed is that we wanted the broad representation. So we do have cattle interest, vineyard interest, and Farm Bureau. We have our researchers from the UC, Ag Commissioner. Let's see, your
the
list.
The only one you said you did.
Yeah, RCD.
We've had discussion with the building. I've asked them to come, you know, depending on what the topic might be. But, no, you're right. We don't have anyone from the building. Public at large, I'm not sure exactly who that might be. Mm-hmm. We do have some people that do show up just for the meeting itself. And someone from was the Oak Protection. If our focus is going to be just fact-finding, we could easily create that subcommittee within our committee to keep it narrow, and not leave it wide open because it'll still take forever. But if everyone from the community has data and facts, this is the committee that I believe can collect it, especially with our UC folks here doing research. They're the ones that agriculture looks for, the information and dissemination.
Okay. Do you have someone on your committee that facilitates it, so if we wanted to talk about organizing the subcommittee, who would that person be?
Well, more than likely that would be the chair, and that's Tina Salter right now, but isn't she co-chairing right now? But she's not here, she couldn't make it.
Right. But she's the chair?
She's the co-chair.
Okay, with whom?
Yeah, Dan Westergaard.
And are your meetings scheduled, or they can be rescheduled according to Mr. Patterson's?
Well, the problem that's going to come up is we do meet regularly, but we do take August off. So what I'm thinking that would work to kind of compromise both of these debates we're having is a subcommittee within this committee that will meet immediately and with a deadline.
You know what we can do
instead of just our regular committee.
I haven't forgotten Ms. Bianchi, but I think there could be a couple of other openings, and I'll be happy as a chair to appoint Mr. Patterson to join the committee and come back within the given time to the 3 months, 4 months with the information, with the structure that he has in place. Sounds good to me. Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, first I'd like to thank Supervisor Patterson and his staff for offering to take on what is not an easy task.
Best thing to do.
It'll be a piece of cake after the wildlife board.
And what I would propose is that Supervisor Patterson be directed to work with the Ag Liaison Committee to form a committee to specifically look at the recommendations that Supervisor Patterson has here, because most of these deal with directly with how our county looks at these issues. And we've heard that we need a baseline of the oak tree resources that are in the county, and I think we really do, because otherwise it becomes anecdotal. Well, we have a lot over here. Well, we don't have any over there, whatever.
Yeah.
And we need to evaluate our current policies and procedures that apply to oak protection for preservation and mitigation. How are they working? What are they doing? I mean, that's a very good suggestion. Evaluate our current policies and procedures to see whether we actually enforce our oak mitigation protection. And to assess the effectiveness of the voluntary protection, preservation, and enhancement programs. You know, that's not a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, and we should be looking at that. And then come back and present the findings of that committee, to the board, and that would solve the problem of being a board committee or not. and it would also solve the problem by working with Ag Liaison of having all of the agricultural entities represented.
Do you mean Ag Liaison, or you mean the Native Tree Committee?
No, Ag Liaison.
Okay, well, we'll see.
Because the Native Tree Organization could be involved in it, and the information that they have could be used, but this would be a specific committee within Ag Liaison.
But Native Tree Committee has everybody involved on that committee. But before we go any further, I think there's a request. Mr. T.G., would you come forward, please? I'm going to give you 3 minutes here to speak your mind. And
no, I really don't want a few minutes. I did just want to add, though, that as far as the composition of the committee, there is an organization in the county that's been involved in promoting an ordinance. I don't really know what they call themselves. I haven't attended the meetings. I really think in order for this to work, somebody from that committee should be represented, and there is currently nobody.
They're on my list. That's the Oak Tree Preservation Committee of EcoSlo, the environmental center.
Oh, so that's so EcoSlo.
We'll have to recruit. Okay. We'll have to recruit them as well.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Yeah, and with respect with what everything is said, that, you know, I think it's also important that Supervisor Patterson have the composition on the committee that he's really interested in. And that, of course, would be many people from the Native Tree Committee, but others as well, in order to make this all work.
Thank you.
Mr. Lentil?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to interrupt the dialogue here, but I'll make a motion that we go after 5 o'clock.
Okay. I was going to. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we'll go past 5 o'clock. What I want to suggest that I do as a chair, if I may do that, looking for the council for advice, that appoint Mr. Patterson, Supervisor Patterson, to join the existing Native Tree Committee with understanding that there'll be others from the list to come in on this committee and have him facilitate with the or co-chair with your chairperson and come back in 4 months since you're off in August. With a report to this board. Mr. Edge?
Do you need a motion?
I don't know if there's an amenities motion or is a chair
direction.
I think you can do that on chair direction unless there's objection from your colleagues.
Any objections from my colleagues?
No. On the specific response to the grand jury, I would suggest this that fits within the recommendation. It goes along with item B, slightly changed. The recommendations require further study. The board will establish a stakeholder committee to study the issues and provide recommendations to the board regarding the questions raised in the grand jury report within 6 months. I understand you're saying 4 months, but
4 months. 4 months.
See, yeah, I know you're saying, but saying 6 months fits the legal requirements of the grand jury.
Okay.
If you do it sooner, you don't get penalized. It's okay.
So while I was hearing you speak, there was a motion. Was there a need for a motion? Okay. A motion by Supervisor Bianchi, and we need to clarify is what the motion was.
That's a response to the grand jury.
Vicky.
Is that in lieu of the other staff recommendations here?
Yes.
It would be specifically the board's response, so the departmental response is the departmental response. This would be the board response to recommendations 1, 2, and 4. And it would be, would you want me to read it through again, Vicky?
I think I've got it. Thank you.
Okay.
And it was seconded by Supervisor Ovid.
Fine.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Thank you. With that, we have a motion to go past 5 o'clock, and we'll move to item F1. And thank you, Mr. Patterson, for your willingness to work
welcome.
On that committee.
Thank you for the opportunity to work more.
I will promise a raise. Okay, Madam Clerk.
Next item is item F1. This is a request to approve a letter to the Tribune regarding the county's hiring process.
Thank you. Would that be Ms. Bianchi or Mr. Edge?
Not me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Edge had nothing to do with this letter.
Okay.
Had he had something to do with this letter, he probably would have noticed the typo.
Ms. Bianchi, may I interrupt you for a second here? Would the people living please... to your knowledge that the meeting is still going forward, and we asked if you close the doors behind you, that way you may carry your conversation outside without interrupting this meeting. Thank you. With that, my apologies, Ms. Bianchi, if you carry forward, please.
Yeah, no, there is a typo in the second paragraph, almost the last full line, where it says efficient workforce and jobs. should be an apostrophe S there. I mean, excuse me, no apostrophe, just an S. With that, thanks to Deputy Director Gail Wilcox, who was an extraordinary help in putting this letter together. We tried to make this letter, as we stated last week, as an educational letter. It does not attack anyone. It does not. We tried to make it a positive letter to explain the hiring practices of the county and our relationship with the Civil Service Commission. And you will note in your copy that was distributed to you that some words were taken out, mainly because I got a little fiery, and so some cooler heads prevailed. And the addition is in red letters on the second page primarily, and a little bit at the bottom of the second page that goes over to the top of the third page was removed, and some language was added. If there are any members of the public who would like a copy of this letter, the clerk has some copies up there so you can see what was taken out and what was added. And with that, that's about all I have to say.
Thank you. At this time, any comments or questions from supervisors? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. First request to speak is Ms. Daniels or Danielle's. Kimberly? Well, did you want to take a...
Let her have a second to read.
Okay. All right, while you're reading that, we'll take a short outdoor break.
You want 5 minutes, Ms. Daniels?
That'd be good.
You want what? Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay, did you want to speak at this time, ma'am? Please come forward, give us your name for the record.
My name is Kimberly Daniels. I'm the general manager of the County Employees Association, and the areas that I wanted to address are not covered in the changes that I was just given. We are requesting that your board consider amending the letter that you have drafted, responding to the editorial which appeared in the Tribune on July 23, 2006, to ensure that accurate information is relayed to the public. Specifically, I'm referencing paragraph 4 on page 2 of the letter, page that is identified as F-13, wherein you state, the process for appointing a person to serve as deputy director of this new department had not even been initiated when the Civil Service Commission began an investigation. I would like to advise you that I was personally told in my capacity as general manager on April 14, 2006, specifically who the new deputy director of human resources was going to be and the process by which the appointment was going to be accomplished. I'm not sure if this letter, the proposed language, is indicating that the position had not yet been allocated technically, but it was very clear that there was a person who had been selected to fill a position as soon as it was open. Additionally, the Civil Service Commission did not just jump in and launch an investigation. The Commission responded to information that had been set before it in their official capacity as commissioners. Last week at your meeting, it was stated that the appointment of a Deputy Director of Human Resources was being proposed under Rule 505A of the Civil Service Commission rules. When this matter was presented to the Commission, it was presented as it was going to be a departmental promotional position, which is what caused all of this to be looked at a second time to begin with. Also, excuse me, on page 2, paragraph 5, you state, it is disturbing that an investigation into this matter was launched and persons were judged to be guilty before recruitment had even been initiated.
And that language has been removed.
Okay. I apologize then. Because it was clear there wasn't going to be a recruitment, and that was clear from a number of things that happened. The statements, the public statements that the person had been selected, and even information that was provided by the CAO himself in his response to the blogs that were in the Tribune. It appears from your letter that you are unnecessarily critical of the Civil Service Commission, and it gives the appearance to a reader such as myself that the board has taken sides in this issue. We're asking that you review the commission's minutes from March through June and get a better picture of what has transpired. Additionally, we're hoping that it may be a little more clear to you now why there have been so many questions, comments, and requests directed to your board to investigate on your own for yourselves or appoint a neutral investigator to discover what has been going on before you act or react, and we are respectfully requesting that you do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak on this item? Please come forward. Seeing none, bring it back to Ms. Bianchi.
I had hoped to make this letter a response to the editorial comments that were in the Tribune, not to impugn any negativity towards the Civil Service Commission at all. Or we wanted to explain what our hiring practices were. And I think, you know, one of the difficulties could be over the word initiate. You know, I'm always saying, boy, what I'd like to do is, you know, whatever it is. And then people say, you can't do that. So I didn't get to initiate what it is that I really would like to initiate. You know, I think it's a matter of language. And if the Civil Service Commission states that a hiring practice or something that somebody wants to do is not appropriate, then it doesn't happen. Shouldn't happen. So I think, I better stop. I would make a motion that we accept this letter to send to the Tribune in response to their editorial.
Motion by Supervisor Bianchi.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Ovid.
Mr. Chairman, you may, don't want to jump into an item I'm not involved in. I think you may want to say the letter as amended, because I think the letter that you're looking at has those changes from the one that was actually published on the core agenda. So I think if you just say the letter as amended, that would...
Yeah, as amended and corrected with that typo out of the...
Second paragraph.
After the second paragraph, the last full line, and jobs should be awarded.
Second concurs.
Madam Clerk. Roll.
A roll call?
Or voice.
Either's
okay. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Let me know, it's unanimous. Thank you. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
And we didn't have to go past 5.
Well, Mr.
So now I have things to do.
Yeah,
I
gotta go.
Yeah, me too. So do I exit first? Okay.
Have fun, Harry.
Exit, then I go on the one that's running, and I say stop. In the name of thank you guys for hanging with me.
You did.
Okay, let me just listen.